them apparently has got more important things to do than being part of these meetings. I'm happy to actually accept their apology because we had to move them last week, so it would be unfair of us to be too harsh. But I would usually think that the people that pay your salaries and stuff will come and check. Sorry, that should never happen in this meeting. So I don't know where's the water. I should put this phone in the water, as I promised everyone else.
It might get late.
But I was waiting for a call from the president, so you will excuse me. I didn't want him to hold, you know, that while I couldn't see the call. So a lot of their people are at a workshop in, I think, the Free State somewhere, and their chairperson is dealing with some private issues. So we will deal with them at a later occasion. I ask that we accept their apology, seeing as we put them out from last week. I've added, because of a request I received, the Water Research Commission to deal with their matters, because as you know, we all agreed that we're only going to deal with the entities that we feel there's some reason to have them here. The ones that would just run of the mill, we wouldn't worry now about them. We would do them at a later stage. But I've added the Water Research Commission so we can also deal with them. I'm actually also interested to see what research they're doing and how it can actually, whether it's actually relevant to the kind of work we're doing. Because the two authorities are both basically dealing with more infrastructure matters, I thought we'll have them last so we can spend the rest of the time we have with them. And we'll start with the Water Research Commission. So we will do that. Just to say for the rest of the program, as you know, we don't yet have any matters on the program for next week. What I am trying to do, remember I said I would like to start the green paper with some scientific information in terms of trying to see when we talk about climate change. I mean, what are we talking about in South Africa? I mean, has the temperature risen 1% in the last 10 years? Has the sea risen 20 feet and going to swamp my home on the Cape Flats soon, et cetera, et cetera? So the kind of scientific basis, and I'm engaging with some scientists here at UCT that are apparently the experts on this. So if we can get them, I'll try and see if we can bring them earlier to start sometime next week and start giving us that information. I've also been given one or two other scientists, for example, one that does the kind of social impact of climate change, to try and get, you know, when the submissions come, people come with their own interests, and so it's very much pushing their own interests. I was trying to form a basis of our debate on climate change before it. So that's the kind of information I'm trying to find and will place before you. So just watch the program. If I can get them to come next week, it'll be nice so that when we start the public hearings, we already have a basis for some of that, for the information. And as I said, the rest of the program, we'll see how it goes. You've heard that the president announced that the election will be sometime before the end of May. So I imagine we can start preparing for April and May, basically not to be in Parliament and basically being in Hastings and trying to win votes. So I imagine that really leaves us with only March, which is very tight, I'm afraid. I think those are all. Anyone want to comment on it before we start with the Research Council? Anyone? You're all happy? All right. Good morning to the Water Research Council. Have you got names? I don't know. Have you got a list of names? Just introduce yourself when you start. Have you got? Okay. Let me see who I'm talking to. Thank you. Kale.
And from the Water Research Commission here too, today we have Dr. Kassel, our CEO, and Shungibi Sile, our PR lady. So it's my pleasure to introduce the Water Research Commission and speak briefly about the mandate, and then I will hand over to you.
No, not too much. What I'm really worried about is, what are your finances looking like? Have you got any financial, you know, when your last audit, that kind of stuff? And then the kind of research you're doing, and then there are certain questions that people will have that may go wider than that. But I want you to keep your input. I don't want it to go more than an hour, so we can use the other 2 hours for the other entities. So welcome, and thanks for coming at short notice, and if you can concentrate on those issues, it'll be nice. Thank you.
In your blue folder, there is the presentation, if you'd like to look at that. And we've also added a lot of information that the Water Research Commission produces. So, for example, under the chairperson, we were talking about climate change now. We've got a little summary booklet on all the climate change reports that have been produced by the Water Research Commission. And we've included examples of other summaries of this is water and health, water and sanitation, groundwater reports, and capacity building. We've just given you an example of the type of material that Water Research Commission does produce, so you can find all of that in your folder. We also have these policy briefs, so after research has been done, to summarize some of the information, we put out the different policy briefs as well, and those are in your folder. And then we have a sort of popular publication, The Water Wheel, which is also gives you a nice summary of current issues. So, for example, this January-February issue, it's got a nice story on acid mine drainage. It talks about rehabilitation of wetlands and all current issues that are being discussed in the water sector at the moment. So we hope you find those useful. And in the past, the Water Research Commission has spent time with the Portfolio Committee, and we welcome that in the future. If there are any particular issues that you need to discuss, the Water Research Commission is available to bring that knowledge. Okay, our mandate is to promote, coordinate and communicate in the area of water research and development. We establish needs and priorities. So obviously there's a lot that needs to be studied, but through consultation with stakeholders, we establish what is important at the particular time. We fund research then according to priority, and we promote the transfer of information and technology. And that's why in your folder I was showing you some of the published examples of that promotion of technology transfer and information sharing. We also play a role in enhancing knowledge and capacity building within the water sector. Involved with projects, there's a large number of students. We build research capacity throughout the sector and also add to the water sector in terms of skilled individuals. Okay, in terms of our strategic context, going on to the next slide, we deal with both the water cycle and the knowledge cycle. And knowledge generation is about new knowledge, so new projects, but also repackaging information. So for example, using climate change again as an example, research has been ongoing at the Water Research Commission for at least the last 20 years. But sometimes to answer specific questions at the time, we don't need new research, we just need to repackage what is available and put that information out there. So we share knowledge, we disseminate it, we transfer, and we also try and measure the impact of research. What impact has a particular research had in the field? Knowledge has a number of different roles. For effective governance, for competency and skills development, as a source for appropriate and improved technologies and practices. We're all probably familiar with the green drop and the blue drop reports. And that information, those water quality standards, all of that's based on comes from past research. So we wouldn't be able to have monitoring guidelines or anything like that without research. And so in many different aspects, we have this long history of research that eventually leads to policy and policy changes and inputs to new policies. Knowledge also provides for situation analysis and for monitoring progress. And as I said, a good example of that is the green drop and the blue drop reports that are now used by the department. Going on to the next slide, in water management, all the aspects shown here the Water Research Commission deals with. So the quantity of water is important, the quality of water as well as accessibility to water. Land use must be harmonized so that with water use, so that there is sustainable resource development. And we have to protect the resource that we're dependent on. we need to, so that it can provide the goods and services that we are dependent on. And all this falls under the catchment that is our planning unit. So just to revise what our mission and vision is, in the next slide, our mission is to be a dynamic hub for water-centered knowledge, innovation, and intellectual capital. We provide leadership for research and development. So we coordinate research, providing leadership in the research area. And we engage stakeholders and partners in solving water-related problems. And typically on any research project, there is a reference group that will include members from government departments and all stakeholders. So they have buy into the research right from the beginning of the process. Okay, and so our vision is to be a globally recognized leader in providing innovative solutions for sustainable water management to meeting the changing needs of society and of the environment. Our CEO will now continue with the presentation.
Sorry, that green drop and red white
drop
away. Are you saying that you did the research and the department using all those with the collaborative?
It's collaborative, in part.
I just wanted to make clear.
Yeah. Most of the research is a collaborative effort.
Okay. Continue, CEO.
Okay. The WRC, under in the leadership of its chairholder, the Minister of Water for Environmental Affairs and the strategic direction set by its board, continue to manage its strategic and operational level, and have a sound corporate governance framework. We have a board charter, we have a code of ethics, we have our set of values. And the board has five functioning committees that include audit, which include also finance and risk, human resources, research policy and strategy, remuneration, and an executive committee of the board. The audit committee functions in accordance with its clearly defined charter, and WRC complies with both the Water Research Act, with the Public Finance Management Act, and Treasury Regulation. We haven't prepared many financial slides, so let me just say, we had a clean report last year, and I can leave the annual report, because I wasn't sure it's an annual report presentation. We had a clean report. We only had one instance of matter, which was we actually, had to reset some, prior year, adjustment, and that was the emphasis of matter. But otherwise, it was clean. We had a good balance sheet. It wasn't a major, no major issue. So, the annual report.
What was the adjustment? What were you saying?
There were some debt that had to be readjusted. That was not, it was a prior year mistake that was corrected. So
it's
basically,
just
our
accounting thing.
It's an accounting thing.
No systems problem.
No
right,
system problem. So it was a clean report, overall. But I will leave you with
Hallelujah.
The annual report. What did you bring it, Maybe in case I need it now or not. I will try and concentrate on research that is actual and to the point now and looking forward to the future, because
first tell me, what is your capacity?
Okay.
How many research you've got? What kind of seniority?
Okay,
let me
say the key issue of what we are. We actually are, in very simplistic terms, a funding agency for water research. So we don't do research. The Act actually allowed the WRC to do research, but we are 40 years old this year. And it was decided then and there that the Commission will not do research. The Commission is not doing research. The Commission provides all universities. You talked about professors at UCT doing climate change. We fund them. We fund people to do climate change in the University of KwaZulu-Natal. The social part of climate change is done in WITS, what I mean? So basically, our funding is very, very wide across all universities and science councils. But we don't stop there, because sometimes the consultant fraternity may actually add value. And sometimes we work with water boards, So basically what we want to do is get the right team. Water is a multidisciplinary issue, and often it cuts across many entities. So we try to actually provide the right team, Now, we fund differently. We allow two things to happen. If there is a very, very important issue to be addressed in the country, or we see it coming, and we see we don't have capacity, we actually put in term of reference. The term of reference is not dictating the detail, but it provides you with the very clear direction of what is needed. So I'll give you an example. A few years ago, there was no researcher who will work on sanitation. Today, we have experts in different universities who are experts in the field of sanitation. So we have moved certain people from wastewater treatment into the sanitation issue that were required. The same goes if you look at agriculture. There were only people who dealt with commercial agriculture. Nobody wanted to deal with small-scale farming. And we have actually mobilized people to work on small-scale farming through the funding. So the funding actually direct the people from as for the need. And so we have two streams of actual funding through the cycle, which is fund every year but allow for research fund for projects to go for 3 to 4 years, which allow people to do master's degree and PhD during that period. Overall, we are very small. As a funding agency, we try to keep a ratio where 3/4 of the funds are going out, which is quite difficult, and we will talk about it because more and more needs are for actually knowledge dissemination from our side. But we basically, most of the money goes outside the WRC for funding research. We only 51 permanent staff. And I think through the other activity for capacity building, like Venus A and Petwater, you know, there are a few other people, but overall, the only 51. As you can see, we're mostly female, and there's also a very good ratio as for demographics. Now, basically, our aim from Point of Water is to solve three major issues, which is the fact that we are water-scarce area. Well, it doesn't look like it lately in some area with the flood, but that's part of, you know, what we are experiencing throughout the years. But water scarcity is not only, you know, from point of rain distribution or, you know, time frame of rain distribution. It also can be due to historical, you know, what the country, the legacy of apartheid, the inability to actually provide water services will create, at the end of the day, water scarcity, and one has to look at it. Water poverty is the old issue of how water can actually provide for economic growth and actually understand the overall need for water above the basic need. And water productivity is actually saying for any water use, you can use water better. So you can actually extend the amount of water, especially when we talk about agriculture and use of water, we can extend the use of water. So basically we say through research and development, we create the knowledge, we either create a policy or inform policymakers or provide the process of the technology required. The aim is overall indirect, and it's very difficult for us to measure because it's indirect and there is many intermediaries. We are not an implementer. So the research actually needs to find ways in which we can, you know, provide for implementation that will make a difference from point of economic, social, health, and environmental issues. And that's what we actually ask the proposers to actually address to begin with. We do that through four key strategic areas. And the four key strategic areas, and I will link it afterwards to government outcomes, they're very close, are actually looking at, they look at water resource management, and that is from assessment to the development of the resource, and that links to the CCPA activities, management of human and natural induced impact that will include climate change. A lot of work is done also across from point of climate change and policy development and institutional arrangement, which links to the CMA, and you know we will hear more about the informatics later also. Then we also look at the resource itself, the water link ecosystem, and the processes, the management and utilization and the rehabilitation of ecosystem. For example, a lot of work is now done on wetland rehabilitation. Water use and waste management is a very large area of research because it still addresses all uses except from agriculture that is separate because it's unique. So we're looking at what to use for domestic, and this will be urban and, urban and rural, which are different. The mine and the industrial use of water also. And we're looking at both management issues and economic issues, and at the same time technological issues related to water supply and drinking technology. We look at accessibility. We look at municipal wastewater and sanitation. All issue of how mine manage the water and the all issue of sanitation and hygiene education. We lately trying to build the water smart fund, which we want to get different kinds of people doing small innovation of saving water and actually improving, you know, the level of at the domestic arena, the level of smartly addressing water use. Water utilization in agriculture. Rest only look at food and fiber production. We look at utilization also for fuel, wood and timber. In that case, we will look at biofuel and the whole notion of actually what are the implications of biofuel components of water quality and actually what it means for components of water use also. Water utilization for poverty reduction and wealth creation, and you will see we've done a lot of studies on that. And water resource protection and reclamation in agriculture. Agriculture is also a polluter, so one has to also understand the contribution from point of resource protection. Overall, we spend about 50% on water resource management and water leak ecosystem, which is the resource part, and we use it about another 50. It changed from year to year because what's actually happening is because the funds are actually scheduled for 3 years, sometimes the ratio will change slightly, but we're trying to keep it around the 50% for the use and the resource management. Overall, we, and this is accumulation that only started from 2005-06, you know, we build it for 5 years, you know, in our annual report. I think overall, to date, from the inception of the WRC, if I'm not mistaken, there's over 2,000 reports on the website now. But, you know, taking into account it's about 40 years, and initially we started very, very small. I think the budget initially was about 2 or 3 million, you know, rent per year. Of course, the rent value is very different, you know, from now. But what you can see is that around the 50 are starting and around the 50 are, you know, basically finalized every year. It's actually gone down. Projects are getting bigger and more complex and multidisciplinary, and sometimes they take longer to finish also. But overall, we run around the 300 projects per annum. And when I said we run it, we basically provide the fund management and we provide the actual management for point of steering committee, providing feedback, managing those projects on delivery. So people only pay the point of the delivery of a research output, which is actually set up in the proposal to begin with, you know, when we actually contract those people. And we basically allow through that for people to do PhDs and MSc, which is built into this research project. But just to give you a feel, during 2009-10, the total investment in supporting knowledge creation, sharing, and dissemination was about 115.8 million. And this is about 75% of the total, you know, per annum. We managed to leverage income. So basically, we don't, get away from our mandate, but we managed to get money, mostly, you know, locally, but also from the European Union to bridge research funds where possible. And we also do some capacity building and other dissemination activity. VINUS-A is a program that was part of the Matimabane program. It's a European Union fund for actually water information network for South Africa and with local government. And I think, did we give the material about VINUS-A there? Yeah, fake water is more about policy and water resource management. It's building actually linkages at university and providing capacity building for decision makers. We try to support students, and when we support students, we're looking at historically disadvantaged students and universities, and we build some very good capabilities in universities such as the Western Cape, in Limpopo, and in Venda, in various kinds of areas. Around 550 to 600 students are basically funded by the WRC per annum. Last year was 62% of them were from disadvantaged background. What we see is a lot of students also coming from Africa that are part of the build up, which is quite interesting. The WRC a few years ago, you know, with the blessing of then the minister, started supporting Africa, but we do it basically in kind, and it's not our fund or our levies that actually used, but we have been supporting NEPAD, and we've been supporting the Inter-Academy program for programs that build capacity for water research in Africa. This is just a feel of how many students throughout the years, and basically indicate our other activities that relate to supporting capacity building. We're very much aware that we need to build research capacity for the future, but we also need to actually support capacity to allow governments in all spheres to work. So we try to actually either build training courses or actually, you know, provide for some sort of a drive. So for example, we serve on the skill development strategic task team of the water sector, and we provide support to national and local government through development of
CEO, courses. I think we're giving too much detail now, okay?
Okay, that's fine. I don't know if you reach us, you know, I have a few examples of research that we've been using. So
I'll just touch on each one, but don't go into detail.
Okay, this is basically a project that's been done on small-scale water treatment plants. That's where our majority of the problem is, and the question is actually what you can identify, and we try to make, this is repackaging of material to make it user-friendly and very simplistic in a way, that will allow, you know, a guide of how to actually technically support a small-scale operation. This is very innovative, so again, for small communities, we wish it would be applied more, but this is the capillary ultrafiltration mechanism developed, patented in South Africa, is now licensed to a company called Ikasaka, but based on the research and our membrane technology ability in the country, which are very, very advanced, we actually can treat water that will be suitable for clinic, hospital, school, farms, villages, and so on. And it's a modular system, it's a very good system that actually can serve our rural area fantastically. The next one is about VIP. You know, we have areas where we put a lot of, you know, ventilated pit latrines, improved pit latrines. It's very, very difficult with dense population to clean them. So we keep on looking at simplistic innovations that will allow better approaches and better ability to actually clean them. And the Nabobek and the Gobler are actually two modular systems that will allow it working very closely with the Kwame Metro SOD. Environmental one, you know, we have put a guideline to a management series of how to manage wetlands, rehabilitate them, and understand why they're degraded. River Health Program is another example of many years of research that became actually a government program. And basically it's monitoring, and it's monitoring beautifully as an index the health of our rivers. I think 62 rivers in the state have been addressed. And I think from this came the Adopt River program, which is again actually a parliament function that actually being taken by local government, which is beautiful. And again, this is a very good, you know, program that, you know, if applied and addressed properly, can do a lot of good to the country. Agriculture water resources, this is something that we're trying very, very hard to get implemented in South Africa, but it's basically looking at management of water for agriculture and understanding the level of use. I think for lack of time, I wouldn't talk. I talked about how your food security is putting a lot of effort into, you know, homestead gardens, and we looked also into infield rainwater harvesting at that level. It's been years of research on mine and acid mine drainage. We have given you one of the technical guides. The WRC sits on a family of patents, which is actually further developed by Airbus now, in which you can take sewage water, mix it with acid water, and make water that are actually of quality that can be discharged into the river system. There are also plenty of other activities. You can actually take mine water and bring them to drinking water, bring them in Miami. Yes. They're actually using it, you know, and this is again, you know, all part of the WRC activities on various ways of actually treating the city in the multidisciplinary task team, you know, and try to actually provide all the technical knowledge that is required. Technology wise, we are well set to address acid mine drainage. Okay, that's basically just tell you how many last year we finished, and I would not move into it. You know, this is part of our desalination activity. We've given you a copy of the water wheel. We also have a scientific journal called Water SA. We have a very advanced website where you can actually search and find everything. We have demonstration areas. We go through exhibitions. We run a lot of workshops. And we try to actually, you know, transfer the knowledge in different ways, learning couple in various other ways. I've been asked to actually put in a slide what are the challenges facing us. And I think it's bigger than the WRC. We need to, in order to excel at the hub and be useful, we find our environment changing rapidly. And we need to understand how to make an impact. We are struggling with that because of the complexity of the impact pathway, the time frame that is often not understood from point of research, which is long-term research, to application, and the role of various intermediaries. Very important for us is also future research capacity and how to improve that, because otherwise the country will not really have new scientists in the future. You know, overall, you know, scientists are aging in the country. We link that to government outcome. I don't know if it is needed, but, you know, our approach is there, but I have a few slides, but it's not needed. You know, this is basically taken from government, but that's basically how we link to government.
What you can explain to me, and you must excuse my ignorance, I'm new in this area, can you explain to me what's not coming across? I mean, you get money, you give it to researchers.
Yeah.
Now, the research that's done, who does that belong to? Number one. You can tell me how.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you're giving it to researchers. I mean, the researcher, for example, wants to link up with a private company and start using that information to get rich. And it's not used. I'm trying to, that's why I'm saying, excuse my ignorance, I'm trying to understand how. You see, I had a misunderstanding. I mean, I haven't read the documents because I didn't have them, but. I didn't understand. I thought you do the research. So try and tell me how it is that link takes place. How you've told the priorities, you look at the outcomes of government, you're trying to fit into that, and obviously what you think is important. And then you give money for people to research. How does that information, what happens with it? Who does it belong to? And how does that actually benefit the country? Can you explain that part to me? And then make it easier, we can then open up the question.
Okay. What we do is that we, on the research, we currently don't own the IP, but when it's fully publicly funded, the intellectual property. Because there is the new bill that intellectual property that says a public funded institution will own the intellectual property. Until, if it is not fully funded by them, and if it is funded by private bodies, the intellectual property that will come out of the research will belong to us, and we have to proceed that it is transferred and used for the good of the country. country. Now, the research overall, every research project ends up in either a, what we call a technology transfer or a normal technological report. All those reports are available free to all South Africans, both electronically and in hard copies. We publish in the water wheel and we publish on our web whenever the research results are available. However, waiting for the research results is actually too late for actually providing for transfer of knowledge. So when first of all, to decide on the priority, we don't do it alone. So basically, people who need the results in the long run will be part of the decision of what is the priority. Thereafter, when we come and we call for proposal, when the proposal comes, research proposal comes in, then we send it to end users and people who actually require, and they can actually judge and say. Then people from the same segment will be sitting on what we call a steering committee or reference group. So throughout that period, we will actually build, you know, and do the research. In some cases, if we do research for community, the community is part of, you know, what you call action research, and it's done with them. Thereafter, we actually do workshop and transfer, you know, further transfer. We then put in policy brief and technical brief. Now, the chair has actually provided for the four different aims of what we want to do. When the research results will inform decision makers, we spend a lot of time to actually build into it the connection from the beginning. And the scientist has to play, you know what I mean? Often people confuse, you know what I mean, the role of an organization like CSR, for example, and us. But CSR capacity to do research comes from funding from the WRC. I'm talking about the water arena. And thereafter, they may actually do very specialized work that takes that research further to solve a specific problem in a specific locality. So a lot of what we provide, and that's when we talk about intermediaries, what we provide in the country is not only the technical results that comes in a written format. We provide the knowledge of people who actually serve thereafter as advisor and consultant to the water sector, and provide that knowledge and so specific, because research, as we find it, normally doesn't solve a problem in a locality, while those people take that knowledge and solve a problem in a local situation. So that, I hope it explains this better.
Yeah, I'll have to look at it a bit more, but I hear what you're saying. I can hear what you're saying. Is there anything else you want to add that's important? All right, any questions? Anyone wants to ask any questions? Charlie, Dr. Hahn, Dr. Kalyan, and Mr. Morgan, and Mr. Scorsano.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's WRC, just like the Chairperson you said. This question is from my side. I don't know what the budget allocate for the annual. You never indicate the inside. You just say the sum spent $115.58 million for the research, other allocated for the student, is a training or any research. But you indicate for the from beginning, you say WRC don't doing the research, don't provide the research. But you answer to the chairperson and say, you also doing the research. So this is a confusion to me now. But you also highlighted, say, you put the European Union funding. I don't know how much funding you get the EU funding. Because I'm quite interested in where your budget allocated from the department side, then total annual budget, how much you allocate, then how you distribute to the order you providing for the order outside the service. And I like to know, you WRC also have some consultant assist to you. So you, my question, do you use the consultant in the WRC? If you don't use the consultant, then you provide for the technology. You say you provide, create the technology and knowledge. How you do the provide this knowledge? And due to the chairperson asking question, how deal with the private? because your information out there, maybe in your website, all people can see the research, the result. But something is go to the private for the research use. I like that because your detail is very, very deeply the inside. So I just say, can you principle, can let me know the what your budget allocate? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm needing clarity. I'm also quite new to this portfolio, so I'm still learning. But your CUF, now you have done the research for it, and if I quote you correctly, you said that there's a company that's now implementing that. Now, is it a private company? Where does the money from that go to, and so on? And the same with the VIP. Who administers that program? And where is the funding? And then following on to the NanoVac and the Gobbler, these are still, I take it, under development, but where do you see it situated? Will it be going out to provinces or municipalities? Who will own this product at the end of the day?
Mr. Morgan?
Thanks.
Chairperson? Okay, a couple of questions. Thank you very much for that presentation. I understand that the research that's produced, you try and disseminate the best that you can, and that you yourself are not, you know, judgmental about it. You basically present it as is. But what, you know, what you're an entity that receives a budget basically, and you also levy fees. What are you actually doing to assess from the water planners, whether from government, that the actual work that you are producing is being used? Now I want you to understand the difference. I'm not saying you have to tell people to use it. You can't do that. But for you to be relevant, of course, people should be using it. And I would think that you would have an active program to actually prove to the people who grant you money that people actually use the work that you do. And by that I mean sort of quantitative surveys on a periodic basis. I mean, it's quite common in environmental fields for people to have surveys and say, you know, even to MPs, you know, what is your view on this? How does this research impact on your thinking and all of that? Are you actively doing it? I mean, could you come to us every year and say, this is the actual impact that our work, you say thousands of reports, and I have no doubt that many of them have been used extensively, and I think a lot of your work is quite excellent. But I'd like to know that, because it's our right as legislators to actually know what is it. If you are producing thousands of reports and no one is taking notice, it's a problem in the formulation of how you do your work. Then, with regards to, I remain very, very concerned about the strong bias towards river health at the extent of dam health or the management of dams as ecological units in South Africa. And the River Health is a good program, and as you said, it's notched up a huge amount of successes. And I guess you will say to me, well, you know, dams form part of river systems. But, I mean, dams have their own sedimentary qualities and all of that. And I actually want to know, is this something have you even got it on your agenda for the future, the actual system of managing ecological units that are dams in themselves? Related to that, is, and I asked it last year, and I think it's certainly worth asking again. What actual support, if any, in terms of science, are you offering to the remediation program at the heart of your support dam? And also then in terms of supporting the measurements or successes thereafter. Now, a field that I'm starting to read extensively about is cyanobacteria. These are the toxic algal blooms in our water, Chairperson. which are particularly associated with dams, and that's why I worry them, although they're not exclusively. So areas like the Kruger Park have a particular load that they have to deal with, which worries me. There's anecdotal evidence that animals there are dying, small animals in particular. I grow increasingly worried about the effect of endocrine disrupting compounds on our populations, basically, and the effect to which, and the extent to which there may be an estrogenic effect, which is really the feminization of mammals and fish from the pollutants in our water. And it's complicated. And the other thing, of course, which worries me as well, and something which I'm not convinced enough is being done about, is after, well, effectively 10 years of a very necessary rollout of antiretroviral drugs in South Africa, what is the viral load in our water, basically? Because people pass, you know, the remnants of the treatments through their bodies into the streams, and it could have an effect on human health. And these are areas which I am
especially close to informal settlements.
Particularly close where, especially if it can't run away. And these things, I mean, these things worry me because I don't see you talking about them, and I read little bits about them here and there. And, you know, we don't want another crisis in years to come where actually the viral load is so high in our water that actually drinking our water is complicated. So I'm interested in those points. Now, there's the question linked to that, really, and I won't opt with the question because I realize the matter is still within the CCMA. But who actually is running Moorman's programs now after she was dismissed in September last year? And what has the effect on those programs been? So I won't ask any more questions on that. And then the last point I really want to make is, are you paying out the invoices of your contractors and your researchers on time? So talk us through your payment. What do you aim to do? I presume it's 30 days. I have a complaint on my computer, which I won't read the details about, of course, where it is up to 90 days in a particular case. And particular comments by yourself related to this particular, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just, you know, for the record, I'm interested in what that is. Is it a unique case? Is it specific? You know, I don't have any particular biases in it, but I'm interested to know what the case of the MP. I'm certainly allowed to ask those questions. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're certainly allowed to. We
yeah.
need to know what systems they have, and government has certain policies in terms of paying people. So, Mr. Skosana?
Thank you very much. I've listened very attentively to the presenter, and in the presentation it shows very well that this is a very busy entity in our country. Hence we've got some questions to ask in their businesses. So let me start by the promotion and coordination and communication that they've talked about. And I want to couple it with the recruitment strategy. Can I get clarity on the recruitment strategy that they apply as an entity? Because this entity is doing very well in terms of the presentation that they are making to us. Can I be clarified on the strategic recruitment? And also the capacity building. How many people have been capacitated since 2000? And I'll just quote this short period, 2009 to 2010. How many people have been capacitated? Because it's from their presentation. I'm asking for what is from their presentation. And also, Chairperson, my understanding initially, so when the presenter was starting to present, I thought it is the researcher that will tell us what are the researching and so on, but as we move, it has changed. I can just get, in fact, I want to get the real function of this company, because I don't get it clearly, because I thought we'll hear information from the research of what areas that are problematic for the country in terms of water and so on, funding, but
ask them a question. I mean, I'll give them a task in that connection. Don't worry.
And also the issue of sustainability of municipal waste water and sanitation. How does they do it? And in which area are they doing it in our country? Because there is a lot of water which is wasteful in different municipalities, but I didn't ever see any project that deals with this. Maybe you can be clarified in which part of the country, in which province, and when did it start, and is it working well, what's happening there, can we get a clearing on that school? Supporting students on special emphasis in the historical disadvantaged area. Can I just get how many students do they support in each province? Because they are busy supporting them. Because we need a skill and the support they do have, and this is a skill that we don't have in the country, a research skill. And definitely, as they are dealing with this part, we need to get the statistics thereof. The VIP toilets, which are not easily cleaned and so on. What type of a toilet are you talking about? Because presently, we do have big toilet in the municipalities, and they're delivering that project, and they say it's a VIP toilet. Maybe is there any new method or any type of VIP toilet that maybe you have, because you are dealing with the research. And also the food security in this part of the provinces, municipalities, do you assist in this matter? Because people really they're hungry and they need food and food. They need assistance. Maybe you come back in funds. Do you have funds in dealing with these things? Various areas. And accept European Union's funds. Can you clearly explain where do you get funds? Accept European funds? And how do you account for those funds, and to whom are you accounting for? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Madam Gude.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the entity for the presentation. My question is linked to Dr. Kosana's one, but mine is more on the project. You are talking about 284 projects that you say you've been supporting, and 80% success of those projects. So for me, my question is, can we have the breakdown of the project, you know, and also the geographical location of the project that you're talking about? The other one, you know, the Honorable Morgan have actually touched on it. So therefore, mine will be just a direct question on the River Health Program. How successful has been this program? Because you say you have started it since 1994. Maybe you can talk on the success of the session. The other one, Chair, for me is I would like to understand if, you know, the relationship, your relationship between yourself and the Department of Water, for instance. How is the relationship between the two, you know, entities? And my next question linked to that is, what advice are you giving to the department on the water challenges, especially around the issues of acid mine drainage and the sewage contamination, because this is what resulted most of the time to diarrhea in some of the areas as a result of the water that people are sort of drinking. And for me, then, you know, that will be very important to sort of understand. The other one is there any overlap? I've listened to the presentation. And I think that is Kosana also in some way actually touched on this indirectly. Is there any overlap, you know, of your work with the department or other entities? If yes, in which areas? And how are you managing, such overlap? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Dr.
Kalyan,
you want to add another question?
Yes. My question, I'm looking at this document, but it's a 2007 document, Now, in your presentation, you say you are supporting about 562 students. I'd like to know at what level are these students? Is it at master's level, PhD level, entry level? Because according to this document, it says that water operator learnerships are urgently required. So clearly there is a gap there, and are you addressing that?
All right. Also add to that specifically what research you're funding in asset mine drainage. Just, I want to know we got researchers measuring the water that these things are, etc. I just want to briefly know, because it's a topic we are looking at, and I want to know what researchers out there or is busy. So there you are, a whole lot of questions, and then I'll make the summary for us in the end, and that will be the end of your pain.
Thank you. I'm trying to be concise because it's many, many questions,
yeah, sure.
And we have limited time, so I may have difficulty to address in detail everything. You know, we just to make it clear, we do not get money from the Department of Water Affairs in a sense of like having, you know, a budget water. It's a levy. We do get money from the department as part of our leverage for specific activities that we do together. So there are certain projects, it's a minority. Overall, our leverage is less than 10%. About 10% of the income comes from elsewhere, you know, of the total budget. And the department in certain cases has certain issues that they need to be addressed, you know, and they see that it's best fit with us, and therefore we have an agreement with them that we will manage that specific, you know, research activity. So that's also, you know, looking, you know, it's one way of working together with the department. You know, the department also will give us money to run specific activity for capacity building or knowledge dissemination, as I mentioned before, headwater or the wind South Africa. In that case, the money comes from, actually, it's foreign money coming through the department into us. So it's basically, the department provides us money, but it's EU money. And we account to the department. Or the department gets money from the Belgium government, you know, that's the UNESCO Flemish government that actually provides for fresh water. And the money actually for implementation comes to us. Those are two activities that we get money elsewhere. Okay. Now, we do not do research. Clearly, we do not undertake any research at WRC. Everything is done outside. Even what I call research on research, basically trying to understand the impact, is done by an external party. We do not conduct research. I explained about the EU. There is sometimes money that comes from the EU as part of the framework. If any of you involved with the EU knows that they have scientific program and it's together, you know, with DSC kind of leadership. And sometimes we actually, you know, together with other bodies in South Africa provide for actually putting in money and getting money to the country for the researcher. Because the money doesn't stay with us, it actually goes to a research component, but we are an intermediary in supporting our researcher for getting funds for certain activities that relate to water. So there was a program in Finnish now called Techno about, you know, practices as for water services in the country, and South African researchers have done the Africa part. And that was EU money that came. But it's small. We are talking about really, relatively to the budget, a neglected amount of money. We do not hire consultants to do research, but we hire consultant firms to do research. So we don't, well, let me try and put it. When the consultant is not a consultant, but he is a researcher, then we pay them. So if they wish to be part of a research team, or wish to actually, because we pay, our rates are not consultancy rates. You know, our rates are researcher rates. And if the consultant actually willing to be supportive into research, you know, capacity, and they are very unique, we still willing to take the consultants into it now. The breakdown of the research is given in the annual report into actually saying, you know, who is doing what and how many students. Private sector, you know, especially the industrial sector, it's quite interesting our relationship. We signed an MOU, well, I mean, as professor, you wouldn't say it's a private sector per se, but we have an agreement with MOU with ESCOM, where they will put in part of the fund. So it's fantastic because part of the fund, together with ESCOM, and ESCOM has, you know, their own research drive, can actually add value to water and energy issues in the country. And we also now talking to Santos, because to a very large degree we can expand certain, you know, issues that will be addressed, because we need to actually address industrial issues, you know, that come. But we do not engage with them in a format in which it is research for them, only for them, and cannot be public knowledge. So the engagement is for the good of the country. The engagement is not specifically for, you know, I mean, I used to work at the CSR. You get into a contract for a firm, you sign a secrecy agreement, never goes anywhere. WC never works like this. WC, if we provide the money, it will go to a third party, results will be available to everybody. And I'll talk a little bit more about now about IP. Now, the capillary unit, the ceramic ultrafiltration unit, it is, at that time, the WC could own IP. It was developed by the University of Stellenbosch and Durban University of Technology. They were the inventors. They worked together towards the development. And thereafter, it was patented by the WC. The WC patented it. We own the IP. And we license it out to that firm. It's a BE company, and that company will pay licensing fee. There is an agreement, and that fee will go back into research. However, this modality is actually getting eroded because the new intellectual property bill indicates that, and we also, our universities are way ahead to what they have been a few years ago. They have technology transfer offices, they understand how to commercialize IP, and it's good for them, actually. It's good for the country if they will innovatively commercialize. And some universities like Stellenbosch now are doing fantastically well at some point of protection of IP and its use. However, what we are saying is that we will support all the universities that are still struggling. We will support their ability to actually commercialize and protect IP. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, this country developed a process that is used worldwide. You're talking about impact, not in South Africa, the Barrandov process. You know, scientists in CSIR and thereafter in support with the Roger Kemah group in UCT have developed a fantastic process to remove phosphorus from water. And this is used worldwide. Consultant firms making tons of, we didn't protect it, we didn't patent it. You know, and it would have been fantastic, you know, if we could. You know, it's very funny because this is a very advanced process that actually undermined our ability to run our sewage works nowadays, because it's too complex to manage sometimes, you know. But this was a beauty of, and especially in a country where, in, you know, in the Potang area, we reuse and reuse. It's so important from point of dense quality to actually remove phosphorus from the water. That, you know, IP issues were not really addressed well, and one has to learn from it in a way, you know. But I think we do have very good example where commercialization has actually happened and taken place also in a way. Nobody got very rich from anything that has to do with it, except from the brand of process. As for the nano and the gobbler, they are very simple technologies, really, really simplistic. It's basically mechanical processes. We're working with the Tekweni. The group that we're working with is, you know, has different arms. It's the university arm, there is the the private guy who actually, you know, mechanically go and pilot it and look into it, you know, and that's when the municipality, because it's done in Epigueni on their area, so they allow to pilot it. So I hope once it's up and running, the municipality, which is a very, it's very unique because the municipality has very strong relationship with university and actually very much, you know, wish to be involved in technology development, and we're hoping that that will take an over. Also, Epigueni is a very unique because it is a rural metro. So you have a situation when you have this dense population which is sort of urban, sort of rural, and that's suitable for this specific area also. Actual impact. We started a few years ago to do impact studies. We get external bodies and say, if we have to make, you know, we identified four impact areas that we would like to make a difference, which is health, the environment, social implication, and social issues, and the economic issues. And we have been studied, and the thing is that you can't run one-to-one with the project, so we collect, you know, like all the research on membrane, research we have done on flood guidelines and so on, you know, development. And then we do the impact studies. And we try to figure out, you can do impact studies differently. You can do cost benefit. So you can actually say, how much I invested in the research, how much good I've done to the country. So some of the studies have been done on cost benefit principle. Some of the studies are actually case. So they provide evidence per case of actually how you benefited. And some of them measure current, some of them measure what further can be potential, you know, component of the implementation. And it's very interesting because...
And who measures that?
The company. The company, I mean.
The ones that do the research also measure.
No, it's a different researcher. You see, the skill of actually doing impact assessment is a different skill to the skill of doing research.
So you get other people in to do that.
There are different methodology for trying to figure out what is impact, you know, which is not really all fantastic, you know. It's a complex field on its own, you know, to try and understand it. Now, I'll give you the River Health Program as an example, which is very interesting because it was a research program successfully have been given and taken by government. So you will say, fantastic, the impact is good. Government has taken the research and now it's a government program. Then I can look at it as a researcher and I say to the river are not clean. You know the river are not clean. I know the river are not clean. And there is a river health program. What do you understand by that? But it is a complex system because the river are not clean because we have a problem with the sewage system. So, and on the other end, you know, you look at the river health. There was a period when the river health program were at its peak. Currently, the river health is not dead, but it's not at its peak. So, you know, basically, you know, you look at level of implementation. So you can see the impact is not always. So, well, I mean, to what degree can we basically measure? As I said, it was fully implemented. Further than that, it was taken by Parliament to adopt a river plan. Fantastic, you know. But again, the adopt a river plan a project is actually running better than the river health, you know. So one has to look at it and say how you measure it and how far are you the custodian of that, you know. The fact that people took note and adopted it is already positive. The thing is that sometimes, you know, research economically is not suitable. So you do the research and everything, and politically or economically it's not suitable, and one has to take into account. I will be very happy that our decision maker make informed decisions, and they may actually make a decision not to use the research, but they should be informed when they actually decide not to use it. Because what happens is that sometimes if the decision is made in a vacuum of no knowledge whatsoever, it's worse than actually saying, I know this can be done, I can't afford to do this, I do not wish to do it. Therefore, basically, research should be independent, providing guidance, but not forcing nobody to do it, and I agree with you about it. Talking about dance and cyanobacteria, I don't know if you know, but I've done a few videos of my life researching cyanobacteria myself. I'm very proud. Do you know that we are the country that actually identified the toxin? Professor David Lucas, you know, at that time he was a CSIR. We have gone further than that. You know, there is now genetic, you know, PCR methodology to detect the toxin. We can actually look at the genes that may actually tear it. Because sometimes the blooms are toxic and sometimes the blooms are not toxic. We understand very much what will create the blooms. We understand the issue of phosphorus and the issues of actually sewage and how to manage them. We have been involved in activities for them for years, you know, at different level. We actually have a very active group in the country of people, you know, it's not a very big group that actually address impoundment and address the cyanobacteria in our chair. She's an ecologist, you know, a water ecologist, so she will know more than me about it. So we are not neglecting cyanobacteria. We have never neglected it. EDC, we've done many years of research on EDC. We are currently putting guidelines together to put there. Now, one good news about EDC, which I think we should all be very happy about, it's not going through the treatment. So our potable water after treatment will not include any EDCs, and this is globally known, and we were part of a global research. Environmentally, it's an issue, and if people drink water out of the dam without treatment, it's not a good idea in general. But EDC is all around us. In the modern world is full of them. But we should limit, you know, the exposure through water. You see, currently the world is more worried of what will happen to the fish than what will happen to humans. But we need to also prioritize our country problem. You know what I mean? You know, you need to ask yourself, you know, should you now worry about EDC or should you worry now about diarrhea and sewage system and prioritize where your implementation has to be? The other good news that I should tell you, because, you know, that again, you know, I come from microbiology of water and water and health. HIV is a very good virus as for its behavior in the environment. It dies quickly. So you cannot really have lots of HIV virus in the environment. The moment the HIV virus touches the environment, it's dead. However, for years we were quiet about it because we knew it will not survive in the environment, so we never did research on HIV. And then we started thinking about it, and I personally initiated those studies. We started looking at the implication of water quality on HIV-positive people. And you do not realize the problem that normal water that we drink cause to those people, because those people are immunosuppressed. They are way more sensitive. Their immune system doesn't work. So the implication of actually having not appropriate sanitation, they die from all kind of diarrhea, and, you know, giardia kills them very quickly, you know. So what we have started looking, and that has done mostly with the University of Venda, then we have studies that we have done together with World Health Organization, try to understand the implication of water quality and sanitation for people who live with HIV/AIDS. Not the other way around, because HIV/AIDS from point of environmental issue is not an issue. Invoices and budgets, and well, I think you mentioned the Mulman case is still with CCMA, so I can't say more. I can only say one thing, and I'm not even supposed to say that it was to do with misconduct. Simple and clear, it was, you know, basically, you know, I had to take disciplinary action for misconduct, and I hope one day I can explain to you clearly.
I think he didn't ask that really. He's asking more how work has been affected. And then
okay.
The second question was about what system do you have in place to make sure you play within 30 days. So
okay.
I think he was very careful to,
okay.
as he said, not specifically deal with the facts of the...
Yeah. Okay.
I would prefer, once the matter is finished, you send us a report. But
we will do that.
But
yes.
At the moment, you don't have to deal with it because
okay.
it wasn't
okay.
asked.
What I'll tell you is that we have taken the projects and put them with, you know, three different research managers currently who nurse them, and hopefully from I think it's March, point of March, you know, we will have a research manager dedicated to water quality.
that will actually take those projects over, you know, depending on the community.
Invoices. Okay. I explained initially our contract has deliverables. We pay upon receiving the deliverable of the right quality. If the deliverable is not of the right quality, it will be returned to the person, because we cannot give public funds to somebody where we ask him to do that and he either done a joke of it or didn't do a proper research of it. So we basically do not pay upon receiving the deliverable, we pay upon approval of the deliverable. 30 days come. So
what mechanism do you have if, I mean, you say you haven't met the deliverable. And the person may say, well, I have. What mechanism do you use to sort that out?
We normally have a steering committee that ties.
I'm agreeing with what you're saying. I'm just asking, the obvious next question is, okay,
yes,
so now there's a dispute, so what happens?
We have a steering committee that will look at the deliverable and say, are you right or not?
Okay.
We have mechanism that we look at as for, not, it's not only per se, only our decision, you know, where required. So we have solved the problem. The other thing that we insist on is that, let's say you promise us delivery within a certain time frame. So let's say the end of February you have to give us deliverables, and you are not producing it, and you are sitting on it. You should write us a letter and say, listen, I can't produce. I want to delay it. I have a problem. It didn't rain. It rained too much. You know, somebody died. You know, write us a letter and explain to us why you have to. And then we do contract amendments. And some of our researchers do not like it because they think, well, I mean, this is a hell of a lot of bureaucracy, but you have to do it. And especially when money started moving here and they don't deliver, it creates a big problem because the money, you know, if there is no contract, you cannot move the money. So there is a need to have appropriate deliverable amended of good quality, and then we pay.
And you usually pay, once the steering committee has said, you pay in 30 days.
We don't involve the steering committee on every deliverable.
When you're happy, then it's fine. But if you're not happy, you let them
then
look
we
at
will
it,
let them know and try and figure out why we say it's not good.
Yeah.
If there is actually an issue, very rarely there are issues like you know, there are a few cases when people will.
And I understand that, but then you pay in 30 days. Is that your policy?
Once we approve the deliverable.
Okay. All right. Now that's fine then. I think that explains.
Strategy, you know, every year we actually, according to the rules and treasury regulation and public finance management act, we produce a strategy that is approved by our board and thereafter approved by the minister. The strategy has different level, and actually each key strategic area has a very clear strategy and a list of projects that they will fund in future years. And now with treasury regulation, it's going to move into 3 years framework, it will be a 5 years framework, and all this is actually way to, we have one in front of you, you know. We now have committee of the board sitting, you know, addressing the strategy, and thereafter, you know, it will go into the Department of Water Affairs to the minister. We do meet earlier in the year, in September, with the department to discuss what was done and what are the strategy also. So every year we meet in September, around September, to actually talk strategy, what they want to do, what we want to do. So that's how basically the strategy is done. We also do stakeholder survey, either in specific area or overall, and every year we try to figure out wider than the department what the sector wants and what is important. But we also have to think where science is going and where DSC is moving, because we have to take into account, because you see, every move with nanotechnology in the country, we can improve water treatment. So we need to really understand all those various trends to build our strategy. Capacity building. It's very complex, you know, we don't create jobs. We don't create jobs. The research can create jobs. So for example, there is a research project, it's a beautiful project, you know. It is done in the Eastern Cape, it's called sanitation. It is actually trying to build an approach of franchising sanitation. That will create jobs. So if we widely adopt that approach into sanitation through franchises, we will create jobs. But we are not the one who will create it. But the pilot actually indicates that that is feasible and we can do that. You know, I think it's coming almost to an end, the study, you know.
It has been published.
It has been published already, yeah. Globally looked at, you know, we always jokingly say it's the McDonald's of sanitation because it will have this franchise kind of approach to sanitation. The main capacity we are trying to build as capacity is the students. It's mostly master and PhD students that we are supporting. The operators, we develop material. So we develop training material, and then the training material we also link to the Water Institute of South Africa with VISA. And VISA further actually disseminate the operator material, but we, so being as ABF, actually develop methodology to disseminate it. What we do is we put in guides. We put in training material. The same goes with freshwater. Training material is produced. So people take research results, put in training material. We do not train. But we, now, this study that you have seen, there is a repeat of it now. We're working with the department. Acting previous DG have actually requested it, so we are looking at capacity building in the sector again. You know, so there is another study done.
The previous DG, you say?
The
IT research procurement, right?
She have asked us to do research. Yes, asked to do the research. Yes.
Into procurement. Okay. No, fine. Go ahead.
We have not come to any contract yet. Now acting with the current. Okay. The matter of students we have mentioned. Where are the students in provinces? Overall, you know, it runs between the 550 to 600 per year. Where they are in annual report, you know, I cannot tell you. It's a list of telling you how many in every university and how many in every science council, and they will form.
It's
the
in the annual report, you say.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Page
46.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Okay.
As long as
you have it also in the document, the knowledge dissemination one, the knowledge review. You will have the same breakdown.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You will have the breakdown. Okay. Food security and VIP. Okay. Let's start with VIP. VIP is the, you're looking at different technologies and VIP. We've been working for the last few years on another technology which is called eco-sanitation or dry sanitation or urine diversion. It basically provides you with the separation of, you know, of urine from feet. And you then keep the urine for 6 months and you can use it as fertilizer. And you can take the feces and you basically compost it. You don't need then a distribution system. However, politically, it's not a very good solution in a way because there is an overall looking at people say, why does the rich people have, you know, proper, you know, waterborne sewage and we don't have? I've, however, started talking to some municipalities, but I don't know how feasible it is. I've seen eco villages overseas where you actually do a slight flash in a system when you don't need to combine it to distribution, long distribution system, but you do not have the burden of a sinking toilet, the things are functioning properly, and you do actually have flashing water which people want, you know, and but you can combine it with the two situations. For us at WRC, when we go and talk globally, there is a whole movement that actually look at it, you know. So some of our people, you know, and I'm talking about us as private people, not per se, and as scientists, we think it's very exciting because we don't have the dirtying the river and cleaning the water and dirtying the river. There's a lot of energy in the two sides and a lot of problems. But the technology as it is not yet suitable for full adaptation in a way, in such a way that we can, you know, if some of our golfers say to adapt it, maybe it will be good to actually look and see how can, you know, it be implemented into new development area, but not specifically for our poor rural area. But this is one technology that we can advance. Other things that actually been practiced in Brazil a lot, and we've been looking at it in previous years, is what they call the condominium. The condominium is actually also job creation opportunity, because community build shallow sewer system. It's small scale, very, very small scale, you know, that can go into oxidation point. But basically, you build a distribution system in which you have flash toilets, but you do not really invest. You know, one of the big problems of sewage system is the pumping, you know, of huge amount, and you take a hell of a lot of water into the system. Food security, with a lot of work, there is manual, there is community participation, there are guides, there are videos on onset gardens, and then there is the infield harvesting. Infield harvesting, rainwater harvesting, basically provides you to harvest the rain rather than actually, you know, store it, but harvest it while you grow millets and so on. It works very, very well. We wish to actually get it into croplands, but we have problems from point of getting permission from the traditional people, you know, the traditional house, and from local governments, but we will overcome that hopefully. But it's a very good methodology that globally South Africa is well recognized, and it makes a huge difference in the size of crop by actually harvesting the rain, you know, but it's been working in the home garden. I can
let's try and speed it up. We half an hour past the time already. I know it's not your fault, you've got a lot of questions.
It's not my fault, you know, I don't know. I picked some questions. Talked about river, acid main drainage. We are currently involved in the multi-government task team. We have done a lot of research as for the current technology came actually from point of solving the problem, you solve the problem. It's no doubt in our mind. Costly. Mainly of course of decanting is huge, you know, worse than the treatment, you know, because, you know, that's a major issue. And I guess Google Pay is an issue also. But research has been done. What's so beautiful is that there's new research coming out that says that you will not have acid mine because there are certain bugs that actually can be integrated into the system in there, not allowing it to become acid. But that's too late for the acid water we already have. So we're currently looking forward to how to prevent acid mine, but the current technology we have can be utilized, and we have been in close relationship with the department S4E. We go together with them into...
Have you done research on what impact has already taken place? I mean, water is running into the rivers already. Into
yes.
Some. There's a little strait, and then it goes to Komati. Have you got people doing research to see to what extent that water has been affected? The river system that it's going... Is there someone doing that research? Or not? It's just yes or no.
I am not sure. I know we have done the economic impact of acid mine drainage, but I don't know quantity-wise if we have done this. I can check for you.
Yeah, it's really, I must tell you, it worries me terribly that we, I mean, if the things are happening, I mean, it's my view that we should take steps to stop it and treat it and sue people later. But my problem is, I'm not sure, you know, the scary stories I'm hearing, I'm not sure how much damage has already taken place. And I wonder, if there's not research being done, someone better do a research quickly. I mean, you know, that we can, you know, maybe also speed up how people respond. If you start saying the water in the Komati River is now starting to seem to look acidic and, you know. So don't worry about the answer now, but I would like to hear more about it if you've got
an article in the water wheel that will shed
okay.
A lot of light when you were on the field, the current
okay.
Water wheel. Okay. I think
there was the question of Ms. Nduli, I think, which is important, is the one about we don't fully understand the relationship you have with your department, and I think that's a good question for us to understand.
Okay. A
as a public entity, we have a dual relationship. Can you tell us?
Yeah.
No, we have a dual relationship. They oversee us. So there is the element of oversight, of course, but it's more than that because we have very close relationship as for, you know, there is rarely a steering committee where a department person doesn't sit on the steering committee. In some cases, we have projects that we work together. In some cases, we will send them, you know, we normally, you know, if you see things coming to the media, they will not come to the media before we have talked to the department. We have been talking to the department for years. We talk to individuals. We have a relationship at different level with the department. The department also knows that we are just a phone call, an email, away for asking for advice. So that also happens. We are called to actually give minister advice when required also. And we, by the way, have been functioning like this also as for the portfolio committee. So next year when you have the hearing about climate change, one of our people will be here. And we've been here when you had the hearing on acid mine, and we will come and provide you with knowledgeable information on various...
Then they must tell me they're here. Like with the acid mine, I didn't realize they were here. So
they were here, two of them.
But that's what I'm saying, they must inform my secretary so that we can use them. I mean, I mean, it's good for them to be here and show, but I mean, I think... I'll make some suggestions, don't worry.
They spoke in the meeting. You normally when they come, they actually give a talk. So they don't come there just to sit, you know, they come there and give a talk.
That was last year, sir.
Last year. You mustn't talk about last year. What do I know about last year? I'm this year, please.
BJD.
Please. BJD, no talk. All right. Okay, look, I think this is, I must say I've learned a hell of a lot, and I must say that I'm very impressed with your outfit and the knowledge and the people and the leadership, and you know, it's good to have real scientists in charge, although sometimes I wonder about how good, this is like when you with lawyers, once the lawyers get good, then you appoint them to administrative jobs. Doctors and surgeons, once they're good, the only way they can be promoted is to go to administrative jobs. So sometimes I wonder about this, but in any case, I'm happy for the moment that you, the scientists are there. I do think we need a few things. You know, when I look at this slide where you stopped, government outcomes, if you look at those three first sentences, they're very good sentences. The WRC strives to support government in achieving its strategic outcomes, special emphasis on outcome number 10, support the enhancement of quality and quantity of water. Now, that all sounds wonderful. But for a new person like me, as I sit here and I've heard you speak, and I don't speak scientist language, but what I've heard you say, I still do not have a feeling myself how this chain of research takes place in the sense of, you know, I'm very... important for me, the identification of what is important. Now, the way you explain it is you look at the outcomes of government and then you try and fit into that. It may be more than that because your last answer started explaining how people are on committees and so on. But you see, I think you must do us a little memo. And explaining how this thing works, where you get your inputs on what topics to choose and how to fund and what not to fund, the criteria you use for that, and then right up to the production of the issues, and then I want to be quite clear that we're registering these patents. I mean, I want to be clear that you can tell me that you registered from the time you started, so we don't get that other one that was messed up that's gone overseas, that all those patents, I want to see it on paper that you're assuring me that those patents have been registered and are being enforced. Because, I mean, the wonderful thing about what you're doing is it's for the public and so on, but, you know, I mean, the first thing I thought of when I sat here is, but every business could then look at all the research that was done and then start projects and make money out of it, which is not a bad thing, maybe make jobs and so on, but on the other hand, it may be whether you want that as individuals actually to do it in that way and so on is another thing. So I need a memo for just so that I can understand how this chain of what I call the chain of research and the patent. I want to be assured that we safeguarding what is the property of the people. Okay? So I want to be, you must do a memo for me that when I, as a lawyer, read through it, that it's foolproof, that, you know, I don't see any loopholes and so on. The second issue I think will be important for us to understand better, or at least for me, to understand better what you're doing, is, you know, and I want over the last 2 years, I want you to do a diagram for us, a schedule, of all the projects that you're funding. And in this, so I want to know the project, I want to know how much funds has been given to them, I want to know what the product was, I want to know whether anything was, patent was registered, and lastly, the status of where this project is now. And I want that project, that schedule, to be kept updated, at least quarterly, sent to us, that we can see continuously. You should have it somewhere in your records, but I mean, you know, I have no idea, there's almost 300 projects. I want to see what is being funded. I want to see how much money they're getting. I want to see, that is how we, it's the only way that we can account for your work. It's not this stuff that we're talking now. It's actually the actual scientific things that are being done. So I need that and kept up to date. And then I would like you to firstly, I want at least 2 monthly to have a report from you for the committee telling us what work has been finalized in those 2 months. So that we can start as a committee seeing what work is being done and whether it's relevant to our work as a committee. So we can actually start making use of you. I mean, you know, that's an important thing. Maybe we didn't think about something, we see, yeah, but here's a report, here's research being done. So I don't, at this stage, we don't necessarily need the report and so on. What we need is for a report every to say, this project has now been finalized, there's a report on the website, and this is, and we're happy with it. And so we can understand it. Then I, and please, Chairperson, I want you, do you annually or on an ad hoc basis approve projects? Do you do it once or?
It's done as part of a 5-year strategic plan, starting to fund and plan for future projects.
But, you know, if you're looking at it annually and so on, I want you when, we're not going to interfere with it, but when you decide what projects you're going to fund, I would like a letter from you telling us that these are the projects and a little bit of a reason for it, that we're now going into the aid story, you know, that, you know, we're going to give more money. We're going to give more money to asset maintenance, and this is what we're going to do. We're actually going to go and get people to go and measure the rivers and so on to see it. And, you know, so that, again, as I say, this is an issue for us to know what it is you're funding for that year. We sit here and we interact with the department. We see, you know, I mean, for me, example, there are things in the department which I would have hoped you would be helping with. I mean, the water trading entity and its lack of a billing system. I mean, it should be the most easy thing in the world to actually do. And you should be able to get the kind of accountants and scientists and economists and anyone that has to know something about how you're billing water and put a, you know, come up with a proposal for a billing system. I mean, I'm shocked when I sit here and I hear that there's 640 million rands worth of water we give a year, we can't give an account because we don't know where the water goes. Now, you see, it may not be sexy. You know, it may not be sexy, that kind of stuff. But if you're thinking of making governments reach its outcomes, there cannot be a better way of reaching its outcomes to getting its system to work properly. You know, that we're actually doing these things properly. So I think, you know, I want to make sure that he has a good resource, but I want to be sure it's being directed in the right direction, number one. Number two, I want to make sure that the right people are interacting with it. Number three, four, I want to see how we can use it. And number five, I want to make sure that there are important things that are happening which should have been sorted out, and with the kind of capacity you have, you should have been able to help on these things. Now the point is, if you haven't been asked to do it, that's fine, you haven't been asked to do it, and you can't be blamed for that. But at least we as a next time no and say, but why aren't you actually using that kind of capacity, you know, and so on. So, and then as I said, I do want, when your people come and attend the meeting, then please let me know. I would welcome it, but it's the kind of things like the climate change hearings we're going to have in March, that it's important that we know you're there, that you've got the capacity and so on. Obviously, we can't invite everyone in the sense that, you know, we expect you to come along. So if you can do those three things for us, it's the whole chain of research memo, the schedule on the projects over the last 2 years, and then this whole reporting, let's say, bi-monthly, and then every year when you're actually approving new, or whenever you approve these new projects, that we are informed of it, so that we can see what you're doing. Other than that, thank you very much. We've run over time a bit, unfortunately, and we've cut into the next two entities. Hopefully next time there'll be more time and people can engage with you more. There's a lot of interesting stuff you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Quickly, a 5-minute comfort break. Before you leave, you showed nice little pamphlets there. I think you're boycotting the chair, because when I look through my package here, I don't see the nice things you're showing us. For example, on the climate change, unless I'm completely blind, it doesn't look like I've got it.
I'm the example when they can boycott the chair.
Yeah, I mean, this is starting off on a bad foot, I must say. Really starting off on a bad foot. Carolyn, step forward. By the way, the manuals you do, I think it's excellent. You know the manual you did for local government and for money? Those things are excellent. I believe it is government. All right, 5-minute break quickly.
Thank you.
legal basis. basis, your projects, your mandate, your finances, and then your what your capacity is, and what the possibilities are increasing that capacity. So, I mean, the projects you've got, I mean, the capacity needs to be talked in terms of the projects that exist and what further capacity does exist. So I think you know what I'm really asking. It's a more specific reason you're here than just doing the annual report. I mean, I'm trying to take an angle towards capacity, okay? So you're welcome, and whoever has to start, please start.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and present to you. Chairperson, you've given very clear guidance in terms of what you wanting to hear from us. Our presentation is almost aligned to what you are requesting us to present today.
Excellent.
Let me start off with the institutional framework, who we are, and our legal framework. TCTA was established on the 12th of December 1986 through the notice of establishment. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee will always hear us talk about the notice of establishment. Other entities will talk about the act of establishment. We talk about the notice of establishment. Initially, we were established to finance and build the South African portion of the Lesotho Highlands. We all know about the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, a massive project that we did from the South African side. And on the 3rd of August 1994, TCTA was directed through the review of the notice of establishment to do other work, which is do other projects, look at financing of those projects, but particularly supporting further work that will come into the Lesotho Highlands. Then, on the 24th of March, Chairperson 2000, the notice of establishment was amended, resulting in the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority. And this authority is actually a special purpose vehicle, and I really want to emphasize this one. We always talk about an SPV, the special purpose vehicle, particularly to do the work that the minister would direct us to do as an entity. At the time, in 2000, the responsibility was mainly to be able to undertake projects outside South Africa Treaty, because originally we were meant to focus on the Lesotho Highlands to make sure that we can work with the Basotho people to bring water into South Africa. But this time, in 2000, TCTA was given more work under the directive that came from the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs. I also want to mention the fact that in terms of TCTA being a special purpose vehicle, we are given directives from the minister. I will take you through the value chain, but the simplest route is to say that we go out into the market, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, to raise capital in the capital market or in the money market for each project, and therefore that is why each project is ring-fenced. And we're also given the responsibility to ensure that we administer the project that we're doing.
Sorry, just make that clear to me. Do you only organize the financial side, or do you actually also organize who gets the contract?
Yes, Chairperson, I will give you the full value chain later on,
okay.
But we organize the whole value chain.
So
I will explain
okay.
to you the value chain. Thank you, Chair. And also to say that, Chairperson, that given this responsibility and being a not-for-profit organization, we do not have a balance sheet. And I want to emphasize that, because mostly the funding model of TCTA is confused, because sometimes people think that we've got a balance sheet. We don't have a balance sheet. We're a not-for-profit organization. We implement projects at cost, and we make sure that each project is ring-fenced.
There goes one of my questions.
And also to make sure that we understand this, this morning is that there's no funding from the fiscal that comes to GPCA. And I really want to emphasize that. So in other words, this special purpose vehicle was established for two reasons. The first one is to ensure that the cost of the infrastructure is paid for by the benefiting end user and not by the entire tax base. Secondly, to reduce the government borrowing requirements, and that is the main purpose and the primary objective. Now, Chairperson, when we started 25 years ago, we were operating in one project environment, which was the Lesotho Highlands only. But later on, starting 2001, after the amendment of the Notice of Establishment, we started receiving directives, given the fact that GPCA, even as a small entity as it is, at the time less than 100 people, managed to run billions of rand of the Lesotho project. And in 2001, we were asked to restructure the Umngeni balance sheet. And remember, as a special purpose vehicle, we are a liability management company, in other ways. And given the experience and the capacity that we had then, we were asked to assist Umngeni. Then more work started coming in since 2002. In 2002 to 2011, and I'll just list the project. We were asked to look at a Berg water project in 2002.
Okay, they just go through.
2004, so I don't have to go through.
No, don't worry.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The next slide explains the value chain, Chairperson, what you wanted to ask for. Briefly, what it says is that in terms of the National Raw Water Resource Infrastructure Requirement, the Department of Water, within the infrastructure branch, would identify the requirements that are important for the country in terms of the infrastructure. And looking at the project, you realize that most of the projects that we are funding and implementing are projects that support almost like the economic arm of the country in terms of the commercial users that will be paying for the water and ultimately paying for the infrastructure. So those types of projects are not done by the department itself, the infrastructure branch. The infrastructure branch focus on certain projects. We will focus on those that have end user benefits at the end and are able to pay for that. And that those projects will come to GPCA. Now you realize that we also have the water board, and the water boards that do their own work in terms of making sure that the water is provided. And we have municipalities that have corporate oversight, and then we have the end user and the water is distributed. I'm coming to the next one, the operating model. Now, we received the mandate from the Minister of Water. What happened together with the department, the due diligence that is done. Once the due diligence is done in terms of also looking at the design, the type of the dam that must be, how the dam will be funded, the time frame that it must be delivered, the cost implications of that dam together, then work is decided. Then GCPA will have then to say, if this is the approach that we're going to follow, how are we then going to fund this? And that's when we start going back again once we receive the directive or the mandate, we revisit, because sometimes the time frame between the work that is done initially in terms of the due diligence and the ultimate delivery of the directive from the minister, there are times when it's over a year, and then that will require that we go back and relook at the due diligence work that has been done. So you will see when we're talking about design optimization, because that is very critical, because we're saying while you have done the due diligence, the price might have been at this level, and given the fact that it's a year after, there's a need to relook. And also, are there other better ways of implementing the dam that could save costs ultimately for the end user? And once that is done, TCTA will have then to call for proposals sorry, let me backtrack a little bit. We'll go out and look for funding. We need to determine the type of funding that is required for the project. For each project, we'll help them to obtain what we call project risk rating by the funder. We'll also negotiate competitive financing, both locally and internationally. And then once that has been determined, and we know that we have secured the funding for the particular project, we will then call for proposals based on the designs that have been given. The proposal would, depending on the nature and the complexity of the project, would call for consultants or contractors, let me say contractors, in South Africa and also internationally. And then once that is done, then the project will be implemented. In terms of implementation of the project, there are certain things that we follow. We follow our country's procurement processes and policies. From TCTA side, from the board side, we have said what is critical for us as board is to ensure that we have triple BEE components, there's enterprise development, there's local products that are being used for the project, and contractor development, skills transfer, and local employment. This for us is a requirement for every project contractor that participates within CCCA. Why are we doing that? We believe that we want to ensure that we create jobs for the country and we also alleviate poverty and the local economic development where the project is. Chairperson, I will stop there.
Yes,
and
yes.
I'll allow the CEO to proceed.
Yes, back a step. I understand that and it's quite clear.
Yes.
But you say, usually, the projects that are given to you are the ones that the end users can pay.
Yes.
Basically business.
Yes.
Now, just explain that part. Now, you build a dam. How do you ensure that the end users now pay for it? I mean, do you set tariffs? Do you, how do you go about making sure that that debt is paid back? Just explain that to me quickly, let me just understand it.
Thank you, Chair. In essence, what happens, we have water supply agreements and implementation agreements for every project that we're doing. And those agreements then specify who the off-takers are, who the users are, and that they are then obliged to pay
tariffs. A dam is built. Now you start making agreements with people to make sure.
No, Chair, the agreements are all done up front. Before you start construction.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. So we have all agreements in place. Who's going to be, who are the off-takers, who's going to pay for it, all the agreements in place before we actually can start.
That's clear.
Okay, and it's normally, recovered, our debt repayment period is normally about 2 years to ensure affordability.
Fascinating. Okay. Go ahead. Fascinating.
Thank you, Chairperson. My emphasis, I think the Chairperson has, the CCK board has covered quite a number of other areas in terms of the model of the organization. But I just wanted to touch on some of the points and emphasize the importance of the organization as an SPV. Without a balance sheet, I think one of the critical issues that have been mentioned, Chairperson, is that we lock up all of these agreements upfront, so that by the time we go to the market to raise money for either a dam or a pipeline, we would have funders that are willing to finance those projects. At the same time, I think, Chair, probably a point of emphasis, the tariffs that we set up to repay those that infrastructure are basically discussed with both municipalities, the off-takers, if they are commercial off-takers, and also the Department of Water Affairs through the Minister are sanctioned, but also supported by National Treasury and in terms of usability by South Africans. Those tariffs are always sensitive to quite a number of socio-economic impacts, both in terms of political impact, the macroeconomic swings and changes and spikes. So, Chairperson, we're always sensitive to what South Africans can afford. And we use the indices that are basic indices that are used by this country in terms of the strategic objective of our work is basically focusing, as the chairperson of TCT has emphasized, on directives of what the minister gives us. Now, the critical point about these directives is that these are all projects that should be funded off balance sheet share. Because the department may only have, or the fiscals may only have, a certain amount to be able to do work, but there may be demand for other kind of projects which may not be covered by the budget that year or for a few number of years into the future. Those projects are then given to TCTA because we finance them off balance sheet of the fiscal. And the emphasis, Chair, is that we have to make them attractive and cost effective, because we understand that the debt, if it runs for 20 years, it has to be a generational debt, but it must be affordable because there are other requirements into the economy. And these projects focus on water for economic growth strategically. And you'll see, Chairperson, as we present some of the prototype of our project, that some of them are beginning to show a level of hybrid. And what do I mean by that is that they have a social element in them and not just commercial only. And we'll show you how we try and accommodate the fact that some of these projects may also articulate other to a municipality where communities and localities can benefit from them. The projects are also used, Chair, which is a strategic objective of TCTA, as a lever for change. If we're going to be delivering projects worth 20 billion rand, those projects, through the guidance of the board, must be used as, that money must be used as a force for social change. So you will see that in our projects, for example, we're beginning to talk about how does a dam construction also incorporate BEE companies and women companies that get empowered so that in the future we're not only having the big five companies, but we can have more than five. And these companies that are smaller companies that get hosted by the big companies, we actually put a scorecard within our contract to make sure that there's a skills transfer. And in actual fact, the budget of those smaller companies can be doubled within the duration of construction. An example, Chairperson, which will be given further down when Johan presents, is that we have four mandates that we're planning to implement. Effectively, our projection is that you'll see new, strong, emerging black companies to the value of 8 of them, which are going to be hosted by big companies, which ultimately into the future, we believe those companies can actually club up with big companies and tender for our business. The organization, because it is a state organization, operates within the mandate of the PFMA and other necessary legislation requirements. Chairperson, as the CFO probably will allude soon, the organization, since its beginning, has always delivered a clean audit, even in the previous year, Chair. And for us, it's critical because if we go to the market to raise funding, our fiscals...
And they know that you can run money.
Yes.
It's always difficult to borrow money if you're got a qualified... like the Department of Water Affairs, they will never be able to borrow money because they've got a qualified report. So I understand what you're saying.
Thank you, Chair. The last two bullets.
Comparison, yeah.
The last two bullets. And then, Chairperson, we build our own knowledge and ensure that we have a strong skills base for us to deliver the project. And that is also done through incubation, training young graduates, and also those in turn are absorbed. Chairperson, the last slide is what the CFO was trying to explain to you in terms of how we manage the debt.
Mm-hmm.
That in the beginning, once we have a project, we lock up all these agreements, which are imperative for the repayment of the debt. The organization will also do a strong contract in terms of partnership with organizations that can deliver. We have our own strategic base in terms of project managers and engineers in the organization so that we can oversee and make sure that the project delivers as per the current standards. The debt management is basically linked to the bond market. We raise bonds as an organization and also auction some of these bonds so that we can raise money, what we call our redemption portfolios.
but that's how we
explain that part between the brackets. That's more interesting to me.
Which one, Chairperson?
Yeah. In that one, that data management, revenue collection by DWA.
Oh.
That sounds dangerous. Please explain.
Chairperson, the CFO will cover that in the financial.
No, you're too scared
model.
To cover it.
but Chair, there are two elements in terms of our debt management processes. Some of our projects, for example, the Sotho Highlands, we route the collection of our tariffs through the department because the tariff is segmented into different components. So there's a component that resides with the department, there's a component that comes to us for debt repayment. Some of the projects, like the Bergwater, are basically paying straight into management of the debt, so the department may have very little to do with those projects.
Those ones are, I'm sure, running clean.
A lot of what I'm going to say now has been said, but I'll try and elaborate on certain of the aspects. I think you already know that funding is off balance sheet. But I do want to emphasize that, for instance, on the Olifants project, there's a social component to that. So there will be money coming in from the fiscal for that specific aspect. Funding relies on our guarantees. On the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, in terms of our treaty, we have an explicit government guarantee. But on all of our subsequent projects, we have an implicit government guarantee. So there's an implicit understanding that the government would step in should the income streams dry up for any reason. All the projects are ring-fenced. From an accounting perspective as well, and if you're seen the annual financial statements, we are reporting on each of the projects as a segment. The debt repayment is over 20 years, as I mentioned earlier on, and that is funded purely from the water tariffs from each individual project, which are dictated via those water supply agreements. The cost of the infrastructure is then reflected on our balance sheet, as well as the debt, the corresponding debt. What happens then is after that 20 years, we then have to transfer that asset, once it's fully repaid, back to the department. So we would then de-recognize that asset against the accumulated revenue or retained income that we would have been reflected. So the two would net off and would be removed from our balance sheet. We haven't yet reached that point. LHWP would be the first project where we would be doing that derecognition, but that's still a few years away. We work on full cost recovery from the respective off-takers. We have a constant tariff in real terms, which increases with CPI annually, and projects may need to increase borrowings in the first number of years after completion to maintain that constant tariff. We, in the first number of years of a project, we do reflect a deficit, and that is by design. And the reason for that is that in the first number of years, your funding costs, because you are receiving your revenues after you've completed construction, but you're incurring funding costs during that construction period, you're going to have higher costs than your actual income coming in. So it is by design, and it is designed that way to ensure user affordability. The CEO did mention that we have an unqualified audit report. We've always had one since inception, and the financial statements for 31st March 2010 also attest to that. From a revenue collection perspective, our revenues are received. The tariffs that we are charging for the specific projects are received in full at the end of every period from the Department of Water Affairs. The actual collection of that money from the municipalities and the water board reside with the department. So we basically receiving the full tariff for whatever water was consumed in that period.
Explain that again. Sorry, I'm kind of...
Okay. I'll give you an example. The Sotho Highlands Water Project. Mm-hmm. Our tariff is based on consumption from the Vaal water system. Okay, so whoever uses water out of that, the tariff that they're paying to Dwa, a portion of that tariff will come directly through to TCTA. for direct repayment of the debt relating to the Sutter Highlands Water Project.
So Dwarf may actually ask more than would have to fulfill the contract in the 20 years, that you get the portion that will help you make the 20 years.
That's correct, yeah.
And they'll use the rest for something else.
Yeah. And there are annual reviews, and we have to get minister approval on an annual basis of what is the tariff that we are charging on every project. Okay. From a funding perspective, depending on the actual...
Ah, there's the word. Preferential procurement. Procurement. Very, very interesting word. Water affairs is a very interesting word, that one.
Just
all the staff understand that one very well. They actually use it quite a lot. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, just before I get to that, I just wanted to emphasize that from a funding perspective, the funding source depends on the kind of project. For instance, on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, it's big debt that we're managing and big costs. It's close to 20 billion rand that we're managing.
Sure.
There, the funding has predominantly been your bonds, your capital market. On our smaller project, it's mainly your commercial type loans from either your bank or your international or local DFIs. Mm. Okay. All right, then we get to the interesting part on our transformation. The four elements we're focusing on are preferential procurement, enterprise development, local employment, and skills development. If you look at preferential procurement...
That's a very unfortunate word, that.
The triple BEE basically makes it quite easy, I want to put it that way, to actually score the minimum and be able and qualify as a...
We know in the department they do it very easily. That's not the problem.
What?
The kickback they get, that's the worry.
Basically what we're doing is in the contracts with the engineering service providers as well as with the construction contractors, we build into the contract specific targets from a preferential procurement perspective. So a company may achieve their minimum in terms of the triple BEE scorecard, but when we're actually going through the procurement process and we are scoring them on that specific aspect, we only start giving them points once they actually have reached that minimum. So everything over and above the minimum is when we start giving them points, and that is how we then score them and come up with our preferred bidder. From an enterprise...
It's not used to get people to a certain place, and then you first... on the hard skills, you first have to have certain points before the softer ones kick in.
Okay.
And from an enterprise development basis, we have a strategy which we've now implemented in the last, say, 8 months. So all of our new contracts that we've awarded have actually been subject to this new strategy. Now, what this strategy does is we recognize, you know, that the problem statement out there for us in the construction sector is that there are very few companies, black-owned companies, that actually are CIDB 9 level, which is what we require for a construction contracts of that quantum. So what we're trying to do with this is, for every contract that's a company that's tendering for a contract, they have to give us two emerging enterprises. They have to name them and tell us exactly what is their plan and how they're going to develop those entities. Because our whole aim is that at the end of their construction company, they must show us evidence that for at least one of those two companies, they have doubled the turnover of that enterprise. And our whole objective is to move companies up in terms of their CIDB rating, so that these companies then, in a couple of years' time, do then have the opportunities to participate, you know, as maybe a JV partner with one of the bigger. So that is our objective on EE. And we don't just ask them to give us the name. We actually monitor it. They have to give us a plan of actually how they're going to do it, and we monitor that plan on an annual basis. We've awarded two contracts on two of our projects, so we now have already four emerging enterprises that are going to be subject to this development. Local employment and skills development, both of them also we put in quite stringent targets into the construction contracts to ensure that local employment and skills development are given priority. And in fact, for all of them, from preferential procurement right down to skills development, we actually put in penalties if the contractors do not meet the targets as stipulated in the contracts. Chair, the next slide just gives indicates some of the community aspects. On the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, we had the Petersdal, the property that was used during the construction of the AWP.
You've got it down on the thing, so.
Okay, yeah. That's fine. But in essence, that is then your financial perspective. I'll hand over to you, Hans.
So, Chair, that slide you gave us with the projects that have been given to you since, I mean, Lesotho Highlands 201, 202, are those all the projects that you have?
Yes.
So it's basically Lesotho, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's 9 projects running, and all of them are at some point of ongoing.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And you will see, like, we already say that we've moved from a one-project environment to multi-project environment because of the skills and the capacity.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chair.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Thank you, Chair. I will take the reading through the projects, just give a highlight on where we stand at this point in time. Just the first slide, Chair, this is just on a one page, basically a summary of all our projects. Towards the left-hand side, the first three columns, those are projects that are currently already operational. So we, so to say, in the debt service repayment phase of those projects. The Verb Water Project and Fresh Up Projects are both being operated and maintained by the Department of Water Affairs, and the income streams are coming to DCA to service the debt that we raised to implement those projects. Our new mandates are towards the right-hand side, starting with MMTS2, Willifonds Project, the Kumati Project, and then the WAP, that's the Makulu Crocodile Water Augmentation Project. I think that the slide, I don't want to go into too much detail. I think it's a useful reference if somebody would like to just see basically the key.
On all those projects, I mean, it's, you pay off over 20 years. Are all of them in the clean in the sense that in year 3 you on the right spot with your payments coming in, on year 5 and another one, it's on that. All of it is up to date and clean.
Chair, as you said in the beginning, they are all kind of at different phases.
Yeah.
So as far as, let's say, the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, Verb Water Project in Fresa, where those are operating, and we are where we're supposed to be as far as the repayment of the debt is concerned.
Sounds wonderful.
You know, each of these projects, when we do the institutional arrangements up front, we negotiate with the project partners a debt profile. So, for example, City of Cape Town may be more conservative than Sasol and Eskom. So each one has got its own peculiarities as far as repayment terms are concerned. Chair, the next slide just shows the overall capital expenditure that we plan over the next couple of years. So the total you can see is about 30 billion. Until 2018, that is if we don't receive any new mandates during this period. Currently, we've accumulated already 5 billion rands worth of project costs, and you can see in the next couple of years, with the new projects taking off, we will be peaking spending up to about 6 billion rand a year. The first specific project, Chair, I think you spoke about the Transcalin and Tunnel Authority. I thought I'll just try and explain where the name comes from. The Caledon is the Caledon River is the border between the city and South Africa, so the water is coming across Caledon into South Africa. I think that's about it. You can see the Catchy Dam project that's now located within the Lesotho. It's basically the centerpiece of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. All the water first gets transferred into this dam, and from there there's a set of transfer panels that take it through a hydropower station, which is a Lesotho component of the project, before it goes into the Transcalin Tunnel that takes the water into the Ash River.
Into which river?
Ash River.
Ash.
Yeah. From there, it flows through the Ash River into the bowl system. Just on the, because this is now a bi-national project, so there's quite an interesting institutional arrangement. You can see the two governments at the top, and then there's the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, which is a bi-national body that is made up of Lesotho delegates and South African delegates, and their responsibility is to oversee the project, the implementation of the project on behalf of the two governments. So below that, on the left-hand side, you'll see GCA features there. Our board reports, as far as our treaty obligations are concerned, reports to the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission. Otherwise, it reports directly to the minister. And on the Lesotho side, they've got our sister organisation, which is the Lesotho Highlands Development Authority. They're responsible for the implementation of the project in Lesotho. They've also got a board, and this board reports fully to the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission. Now, just on the status of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, this project is currently delivering water.
Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Don't worry about it, DJ.
Just in terms, perhaps, of the future phase, the committee may be interested in phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. Towards the end of 2008, the cabinet approved that we proceed with phase two. Now, currently, we're still in negotiations between South Africa and Lesotho on phase two. And we will commence with the project as soon as the agreement has been concluded. And that is hoped to be concluded towards the end of the first quarter so that we can start later this year with the construction of phase two. Chair, the first project that TCA was solely responsible based on our model in which we implement these projects was the Birdwater project. Also, this project is providing water to the Western Cape water supply system. We added about 18%. The project is fully operational, and the total anticipated cost of this, or the cost of completion, was about $1.6 billion. This project was inaugurated in March 2009, and DCA is quite proud of this project. We received four awards for engineering and environmental excellence. The second project, which is not fully completed yet, is the Vaal River Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project. The project provides water for two key strategic industries in South Africa, Sasol and Eskom. The project entails basically a pipeline from the Vaal Dam, taking water along about 125 kilometers to the Secunda area, where the water is then split between for use by Sasol and Eskom. The final cost of this project is around $2.7 billion, and we plan to have this project finally completed by June this year.
Can I invite this committee to come and look at it when it gets operated?
We'll do that. One of the newer projects that we're currently busy with is the Mwengeni Transfer Scheme. Now, this project is a dam in the Natal Midlands area, and the project will further increase the existing water supply to the KwaZulu-Natal Economic Hub, mainly for use by Igweni, Ngunduga, and the Mzunduzi municipalities. We started, we're currently still in the process of finalizing the institutional arrangements. We're very positive that we have sufficient funding in place. What is interesting on this project is there's a huge interest by the development financing institutions, in particular international ones. So this project is largely funded by three international development financing institutions. We have, on the 2nd of February this year, awarded the contract for the construction of the dam, so that's going to take off still in the first quarter of this year. And the project is, roughly $1.7 billion is the anticipated cost. So it's all system goes for us to get this project implemented. The next one is the Komati Water Supply Augmentation Project. Now, just interesting, this water is coming from the Lesotho Highlands Water Project into the Vaal Dam. and from there it is transferred on the through the FRESA project, which we now about to complete, and from there it will the FRESA project goes into the FRES system, which is the eastern subsystem, and from there the water will now go into the Kumasi system. So it's almost like a multi-interbasin transfer that happens to the water. This project is solely intended for the benefit of Eskom. This will allow them to start the Duva and the Matla power stations that's previously been mothballed, and it will also provide water for the newly the Kusini power station that's currently under construction. This project is also on schedule. We've awarded the construction contract towards the end of last year in December, and the contract is in the process of mobilizing on site. The budget for this project, similar to the MMTS projects, in the region of about 1.7 billion. The next project is the Willifonds River Water Resource Development Project. Now, this is quite an interesting project. As you can see there, it comprises a dam, which is the Dewerp Dam, currently being constructed by the Department of Water Affairs. TCA is more responsible for the distribution system, the bulk distribution system, and then there will also be a water services system on top of that. So, in total, this project, if all phases proceed, is in the region of about 15 billion to 20 billion, including all the role players having completed their works. Now, the purpose of this project is 50% social. It's to take water to areas that are currently really short on potable water, but also a 50% commercial element, which is intended to unlock the mineral riches in this area, so in particular platinum. This is in the Burgers Fort Skelpoort area, where this project is located in the Limpopo province. Now, this is, I think, the only project that really suffered from the financial meltdown towards 2008, and we found that the miners were less eager to sign 20-year offtake agreements. So what we now are busy doing is we are reprioritizing the social component of the project, and the Department of Water Affairs has requested TCDA to start with the first sub-phase of this project that will allow us to bring water to Jane first, which is on the Nebo Plateau. So we hope to start construction later this year, and by the time that we busy with that sub-phase, we hope that the balance of the project will be redefined as it is currently being replanned by the Department of Water Affairs. Chair, the final project is the Mkulu Crocodile project. It takes water from the Mkulu Dam, which is that's in the Waterberg area. So everybody knows about the Madupi town.
Somewhere in South Africa.
Yeah, so towards the north. So this one is very critical for the Madupi Power Station. Without this project, the Madupi Power Station won't be able to operate at its full capacity. So it's also on schedule, this project, and we are planning to start construction towards the middle of this year. Chair, and I think that, in a nutshell, kind of covers all our projects.
It seems to me that although you've emphasized that these projects are one where the users are going to pay for them, it seems that it's a model that can really be used for anything. And it can be used for government projects as well. The government pays. The only difference then is you don't have to go look for the money. So the question will then be, you're now running these amount of projects. What capacity do you have within the organization still to increase what you're doing now? You keep that as a question, all right? Any of the members, we
just bear in mind it's almost 12:15, and we still need, with respect, to also listen to Nkomati. So if there are any burning issues, I'm happy you ask them, no problem. But at the moment, it's really an information process, really, to see how they can possibly fit into the double budget that the department is going to get for infrastructure. Okay, Ms. Sandude?
Thank you, Chair. I will spare other questions in the interest of time.
Good.
But I think this one for me is very important. Thank you very much, Chair, and the members of your management. It's always refreshing to get a presentation from you guys that shows that some people within the sphere of the Department of Water, one of the entities at least, they understand what they are doing. And at least encouraging. Having said that, you spoke about the second phase. I will just focus on that one. That you are still busy with negotiations with the structure. My question is why, if we were successful with them on your first phase, why negotiations are taking long? Is it because there are issues, you know, with the phase that maybe they were not happy about? Are there those issues that now result in the negotiation, you know, taking this long, and what are you doing about that? I think for me it is very, very important. Thank you, because if the first phase was very successful and there's been very good cooperation, I think that negotiation will take this long. Thank you, sir.
I think it's important. I mean, I was part of that decision, and I'm stunned. It was in 2008. I'm stunned that we're still negotiating before we can even think of starting. So. I think that's a very vital question. Anyone else, Ms. Mukanya?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Appreciating the documents that we've got, of the presentation that we've got from this department. Mine was just to ask, I know that even last time when they're here, they told us more about the skills that they are developing. My interest is that, is there by way, after ensuring that the skills are there from the locals, is there by way where the department can tap in these skills? Because when we talk about Dwa, always, we're short of skills and so forth. So I want to know if they sometimes say, assist us in this, because you know we've got skills we don't have. Thank you very much.
Dr. Wong?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's a DC guide for this presentation is showed us quite a lot of projects. It's total about 40 billion for this number of projects. But I see this one is all 20 years of the payment. So, from now to the after 20 years, I think somebody already underground. We don't know this situation. But I just say, what is the payment of debt? This is quite, because you already highlight that your auditor report is unqualified. Because it is a balance. I think this committee never consider your balance. And also your funding, all from the outside of funding, start your project. And your project, I want to know, you link to the EPWP or not, because you're talking for the woman and the BEE or the BBEE, but I don't even see your project linked to the EPWP. Then for you call the list all the project you got, depending to the constructor, is a passed to the public tender or not through to the tender. So these are all the chairperson interest in this procurement. I think that this tender is very important for the committee one oversight for the list. Because your project owed quite a big amount. And you are after 20 years, I don't know your balance is how you can keep your balance. Because you say your tariff for your income revenue, how you can keep a balance for all the your cost. I think we need more this detail. Thank you.
Chairperson?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you to members of the portfolio committee for the questions. Chairperson, I will try and respond to your question in terms of the capacity to do more projects into the future. And for Ms. Ndunde, I will ask your hand to respond to the Lesotho Phase 2, what is taking too long in terms of the negotiations. And then the CEO will answer Ms. Mukanya in terms of the local skills and the support required for DWARF. And Dr. Wang, I'll ask the CFO to respond to your question in terms of the public tender. And I think I also heard you saying that the link of the project with EPWP. Thank you. Chairperson, the capacity from TCTA side, as I said, we started off very small and we still remain very small in terms of doing the project. When we started with the Lesotho Highlands, the TCTA was less than, I would say, 20 people when we started. And given the number of projects that have been given to us, we have started upping in terms of the capacity. Currently, we are about 130 people managing those billions of rands. And we believe that we don't need to expand TCTA to be bigger, to be able to do more. But given the experience and the knowledge that we have in the organization, we think we should be able to run multi-projects at the same time.
So there is capacity.
There is capacity, good capacity. And what we're trying to do, Chairperson, is to ensure that even the knowledge that we have inside TCTA, we keep it. We maintain, we make sure that the models that we are implementing can be reused. That is why even when we get projects, we rescope those projects to see how better we can improve on what was initially proposed to make sure that we can reduce the cost of funding for those projects.
Chairman, on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, I think I just need to say that I'm kind of talking a bit on behalf of the Department of Water Affairs as well, because TCTA is not directly responsible for the institutional arrangements, which is the binational agreement. But just on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, it is taking longer than what we expected. We identified a number of issues which is the kind of lessons learned from the implementation of phase one of the project. I would say there were roughly two critical issues that we had to resolve, and the first one is how the project will be taxed in the city. We've got a treaty between the city and South Africa which says, in terms of our interpretation, that the project is not taxed in the city. And the city wanted to take the opportunity to see if they can get some taxes out of the project. So that one I can say very proudly that we have resolved that one, and we've got a negotiated tax protocol similar to the one that we had in phase one, except that from a South African point of view, I think we improved quite a lot on what we had in phase one. The second issue is a bit more complex, and that relates to Lesotho and the way that they see themselves benefiting from the project, in particular as far as hydropower is concerned, or power generation. Now, as part of phase one of the project, there was a hydropower station which Lesotho paid for themselves. And the project served the internal requirement. So it was very much a social project, and in terms of the treaty, they only had to pay for the incremental cost. So it is primarily a water transfer scheme, and this hydropower project piggybacked, so to say, on the water transfer side. So they didn't have to pay for the conveyance system, so they only had to pay for the incremental cost of the hydropower. So this time around, Lesotho also wanted to expand the power generation capacity. And the first idea was to have an expansion of the hydropower project. But there was an inherent conflict, because if Lesotho maximizes the hydropower, they need to get all the water delivered according to their schedule. And because this is primarily a hydropower water transfer project, South Africa said, no, that's not acceptable for us. We would like to have flexibility in how we draw down on these reservoirs. Now, just to give you the economics of it, if we have total flexibility on how we draw down on these reservoirs, we can actually defer the next augmentation project between 8 and 10 years. Now, that is a value of about 800 million rand a year. So Lesotho then conceded to this. But then they said, okay, they want to do a pump storage scheme. But in order for them to do a pump storage scheme, they need South Africa to take 80% of the power. So they wanted us to commit up front to take at least 80% of that power. Now, this is basically the bit of a stumbling block as we have it now. And the matter has been referred to the ministers, and there's an agreed program to see if we can't resolve this by the end of the first quarter of this year.
Big political issues.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to add something to that, Dr. Reyes, from the department side?
Thank you, Chairperson. As leader of the delegation let's negotiate this phase two, Chairperson, I must say up front, since the 2000 cabinet decision, things have changed. So therefore, we have to go back to cabinet with that. What Johan said is correct. The whole project has changed since the proposal that we put on the table. Obviously, there was some huge risk for South Africa. And there's also the integrated resources plan on the table from the Department of Energy. And the Department of Energy have also now raised issues with regard to, first of all, the buying of the hydropower from Lesotho. So that by itself then have changed the project in terms of what we initially planned. And as you say correctly, Jefferson, it's about quality. You know, things came afterwards, you know, and they've had a real problem in terms of, for us, South Africa and myself, to conclude the deal. Because when we conclude the deal, it must also come here, because it's a parliamentary issue that this committee must endorse, and also then Department of International Cooperation and also the Presidency. So that by itself, it's a political dynamics, and therefore the aspect now being elevated to the ministerial committee. And there's been series of ministerial meetings. It's not the fact that we cannot, but each and every time the project we put the things, then there's a new addition from the Lesotho side that has consequences in terms of South Africa, because we're gonna carry most in terms of the payment for the project. So that is the dynamics.
Yeah, it's like you know, I always say that the Department of Water is like a camel. It's an animal that was put together by a committee. Now it looks to me like this, the Lesotho Water Project is hopefully not going to turn out to be a camel with all the knobs being added to it. Okay, briefly, the other issues, could you?
Chairperson, if I may just address the skills issue quickly. The skills from TCTA are actually being used to support the department, particularly from lessons learned as we implement the project. Just to give an example, in terms of capacity support, we're currently working with the department strategically to support them in dealing with the water trading entity issues. Some of the projects is that we do exchange, we have an exchange program in terms of staff. We have staff members who are working with us at TCT in terms of project implementation, so that we can also share the corporate and the commercial approach towards projects and the different methodologies of project. That component is that, Chair, when necessary, for example, we assist also in implementation of some of socially sensitive projects like groundwater projects, like bore projects, which are mostly rural in nature, Chair. So we do exchange and share those skills and respond when we ask to do that, Chair.
Chair, can confirm to the committee that all of our tenders are open tenders. So they're public tender procurement. If I understand Dr. Wong's question correctly in terms of the income balancing to repay debt, what happens is we have a tariffing model, which is every year, once we've done our budgeting as well and we go through the process, all of the inputs are captured into the model to calculate what is the increase that we need to apply for the coming year in order to still maintain that 20-year debt repayment period. And that is done for each of the projects. We have a separate model for each of the projects and done on an annual basis. And we use that when we're doing our negotiations in terms of the tariff increases.
Okay. Thank you very much. There are not any particular tasks I'm going to put to you at the moment. So I just need to thank you. And can we ask Marty to come forward? I'm sure we'll have further interactions. I mean, this budget is doubled, so you'll probably be more in Cape Town this year, particularly Dr. Reiter, and probably at home, to come and make sure that we're spending this double budget around. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Quickly, Kumati.
Au revoir. Recognizing the rights of Mozambique, Republic of Mozambique, and also to reduce the risk in existing commercial farming by increasing the assurance of supply, provide water for new development, especially the emerging farmers around the area of Nkomati, and also the need for power generation and irrigation water use. Now, the Nkomati Basin Water Authority, national is a binational structure, had also binational projects, hence the sovereignty reason one government cannot run in both countries. And hence we had two dams supporting infrastructure located in two different countries. Now, productive use of the dams, that increasing system of the yields supporting both countries, enables also the legal entity status in both countries, and also enabling the harmonization of the different government systems and the autonomy and the neutrality of them, and the acceptance of the transboundary stakeholder participation. Now, this is how the formation, after that we had the legal state at the establishment in terms of the treaty and the development of the utilization of this resource, which is then called the Nkomati Basin, signed in 1992. And then what came out then is that we've got the South African government and the Kingdom of Swaziland, whereby minister of each government appoints three members who then forms joint water commission. They are appointed as commission three each. So a total of six members forms the joint water commission between the two countries. Thereafter, the joint water commission then also goes down now to COBWA board, whereby three members of each government is appointed by the minister to sit as a board member of COBWA now, which is now overseen by the JWC. So JWC basically talks of in respect of government of South Africa and Swaziland, and then COBWA manages now the operations on the ground, oversees the operations of these entities. Hence it was when the invitation came, this presentation had to be consulted with Kingdom of Swaziland before it's presented here, because it has issues that covers issues of another country. Now, the functions of COBWA are mainly the design, construction, operation, maintenance of dams and accessories, project financing, management of debt financing, facilitating the development, implementation of operating rules, equitable distribution, develop decision support system, implementing the allocation plans, programs, both in Swaziland and South Africa, and also the environmental monitoring project within the river's course, and also transboundary stakeholder consultation and management, and develop and implement transboundary communication in the project area. Now, these are some of the system operation in detail, what is it that they are doing in terms of evaluating hydrology, decision support, rationing the supply, facilitating communities, and then we've got a structure that also includes farmers, which is the KJOF, Nkomati Joint Water Operation Forum, that sits on a monthly basis, whereby they discuss the operational rules of the river, the dams, etc. And then some of their work is also looking at analyzing the data, you know, building institutional memory on both countries, and also disseminating information between the two states, and also dealing with water quality in both South Africa and Mozambique, and also keeping the real-time data in terms of river flows and etc. Now, these are some of the issues which comes with risk and uncertainty, then mapping exposed areas, early warning system, emergency procedures. Should we have floods like recently, how are the countries being consulted through the commissioners to alert them of some water coming through the system? Also dealing with issues of aquatic ecosystem and assessing compliance and monitoring also the invasion of alien species around our dams and our resources. Area of operation currently is that the Nkomati Basin is upstream of the confluence of Nkomati and the Crocodile rivers around Nkomati Port, where it's crossing the Transano Kasha also to Mozambique. And then Nkomati and Lomati rivers are in South Africa, and Swaziland, which both rivers they are crossing into South Africa and Swaziland. When it comes to financial, these are the expenditure that has incurred building the two dams, which is Makuka Dam and the Dricopis Dam, whereby the dams have to be built, that the construction, the CLP, which is Community Movement Project in Swaziland, and in South Africa the RAP was called the reallocation program, where communities had to be moved from those areas where these dams were constructed. And these are the budgets there, of which then AMET came to about 1.8 billion. The reason why we put it as rand stroke E is rand stroke Emalangi. That's why. Which also shows the sign that this is a joint operation, and whatever we're presenting as South Africa and Swaziland. And then, but Swaziland has moved ahead to build now Atok Makuka Dam, a hydro system, which was not part of this funding. They had to get their own funding. They've already developed about 190 million. They've already built a hydro system. We'll see when we look at the picture. The funding came from the project loan from these grants and some funders. These were the loans that were taken, and we've just put the dates of the loans. When will they be fully paid? We've got DBSA 2020 NEDCO, September 2019 GenSec, and December 2016 Hembros, October 2027 RenBank, August 2019, which would have paid the total amount. But what is key out of this budget is that South Africa only 60% of that amount. 40% is being owed by Swaziland, based on the agreement. So it's not the total budget that is due to South Africa. The next one then is the benefits project out of the party state. It has increased the water supply by 312 cumex. Which means per annum a higher assurance yield, you know, for farming or any other development around this area. You can see that we've increased the irrigation lands. In South Africa, at that time we had about 20. In Swaziland there were 13, but the new irrigation land has been increased now to 13 in South Africa and almost 19.5 in Swaziland due to the building of these two dams. And also increased productivity in existing irrigated agriculture in terms of rents. We've increased it per annum in terms of the yield by 102 million because mainly the production there is sugar cane. And value of production on new land has been increased also to a value of about 315 million rand per annum. Now, job and business opportunities during the construction and some of the permanent jobs that have been created, we've been able to create about, during the construction period, about 800 jobs, and in Makuka about 1,005. And the use of local and emerging contractors during the construction, and community involvement in project, and also community saving. Now, what has happened now after this project, when these people were moved, we will see when we show the farms that there has been a project, a reallocation project, where these communities were grouped. Each of them had a funding like for agriculture, had a funding for conservation, had a funding for forestry. Those other ones who lost cattle grazing land had a funding for cattle grazing land amounting to millions of rand that were given to the trust and the reformed trust to give to the museum. But another recent one then is the development of the land around the dam, which is the SUP, the Sustainable Utilization Plan, where already Kobwa has gone out on tender to start advertising for the recreational activities around the dam, which is boating, jet skiing, hotels, lodges, bed watching, caravan park, dry area, swimming pools, and even residential land that is being envisaged to be developed. We've already signed an agreement with the local municipality, the tribal authority which owns the land, and the department, and that project is anticipated, you know, based on the criteria of tourism to produce something like 1,000 job opportunities around this area. Which currently we're looking forward to it, and it's already registered with the National Treasury as a PPP public-private partnership, and we are just awaiting now prospective funders and you know, donors to come forward. If you look now at the challenges that we are facing, I think it's the water abstraction measurement in certain areas of the Congress of the river, whereby there is, we're still busy with the process of water allocation reform process. There's quite a few of your illegal abstraction that are happening around this area. And also the bigger challenge is the issue of the land claims, where we moved some of the people to new lands and we bought them the farms. They started, you know, developing farms. Now land claims came, now they have to move, we have to get them another farm. And also the ecological requirements, whereby during drought season, we always have a challenge of low river flows, and we've got a lot of contamination that one can access, especially between the Crocodile Confluence and also the Komati, around Komati Port and Malalane, and also the Mozambique involvement in the beneficiation. During drought, we've got a problem of allowing the two humans to make sure that they cross over to Mozambique, because failure to do so then creates another problem where Mozambique comes in arms to say, South Africa, you're not giving us what is due to us, and we are suffering the other side. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think what I'll do then, I'll just show you the pictures, run them quickly. I think you can see this was land, and these are the rivers. If you can look on top there on the far right, that's the Nkomazi, whereby the river is coming in between. You can see the borderline from South Africa into Swaziland and out again into South Africa. That's the movement of both the rivers, hence the construction of one dam in Swaziland and one dam in South Africa. The other one then, these are the faces of the dams. The picture, the top one there is the Trikopis Dam, which is now they call it Lake Matamo. The bottom one there is the Makuka Dam, which is right in Swaziland. And this is the increased domestic water supply capacity. This is a reservoir that has been constructed in Pig's Peak that has increased the supply. And that's another pump station that is taking directly from the dam wall in Trikopis, supplying about 9 communities around this area. These are the new commercial farms owned by the historical the former land owners where the dams were constructed. These are the farms that they are currently owning and running themselves, coming from this project. These are some of the houses you can see on my far left on top. These were the houses before we built the dam, and these are the new houses that we have built now after the dam construction. You can see the roads that have been improved, starting the road leading to Makuka Dam. It's an improved road from Pig's Peak, the sawmill. And also some of the areas we've been able also to put clinics where there were no clinics around those areas. And also some school developments were also done through this project, you know, to make sure that we deal with the social components of these communities. This is one project of traditional healers, whereby when they lost a lot of land and trees around the area, we had to now do sort of Pindulu and the medicinal plant and training center, where now they are planting their herbs and medicinal plants. It's around Komazi on your way to Tonga. And also here is one of the
plants I saw there.
Well, I'm told it's also herbal. This is one of the projects whereby they've got a game farm around Hector's Plate. We've got them the land, they've got giraffes, they've got everything. It's also owned by one of the trusts, and it's existing. If you have time, you happen to go to the other side of Komati Port, you can be able to book in one of those lodges and be able also to see. So these are the projects that came from the building of these dams, and they are currently existing. You might have seen last year, Minister, when she was also handing over, former Minister, the implements to some of these people. I think tractors, etc., were handed over to some of these people. And this is the last slide, where recently, I think sometime last year, our President visited Swaziland, and they made it a point that he visits also the Makuka Dam, and that's the picture that was taken there. Thank you very much.
Well, where do you make your money from, this government? I see spending and building holiday resorts.
Yes.
I'm just trying to find out, where do you get your money?
The money was funded from the initial project where I showed the figures for the results, you know, for the movement, the social aspect of the people. But the repayment of the bonds come directly from the DDG, the Rangers. He pays about 180. We paid about 180 million that comes from the department on a quarterly basis. Out of that, only 18 million is used for the operation and management of the dams. The rest goes to the loan. The same portion, which is 60% from South Africa, Swaziland does the same. They pay also about 40 or 60 million a month, and then a portion of that goes to operation, and the balance, it goes straight to the loan. And there are some other projects. Should there be maybe some savings or profits that have been made through interest, what they do, they take it back to JTRDC and say, member countries, this is what we have made in terms of interest whatsoever. Where, how best can we distribute this money?
And your financial statements?
Yes.
Qualified, unqualified?
Well, before some of us came in, there were some problems. Secondly, yes, before we came in. But I can assure you, Chairperson, that since we took over this project, it's one of the serious projects. We have not had qualified reports in 2009, and I'm certain this year also we won't have any qualified audit opinion. Things are looking good. It's one of the basin organizations leading in Africa, and it has already won an award, and we had also the EMBO taking place in Swaziland, which is the African National Basin Organization Conference, which also uploaded this Nkomati Basin Water Authority as the leading in terms of the relations between the countries and the partnership.
Make my heart happy. There's a few minutes for questions and answers. Any burning issues?
Little question.
Mr. Morgan?
Yeah. Thank you for that. Thank you very much for that presentation. I find it very interesting. Do you, nothing to do with you, but related, do you have any concerns with regard, I mean, firstly, you've got a relationship with the other countries, and included in that, presumably, is the maintenance of acceptable water quality. So do you have any particular concerns about the very, very, very high number of mining and prospecting applications in Mpumalanga, which of course is very important here, on water quality, if not now, then certainly going into the future? And is that a conversation that you're having with the Department of Mineral Resources?
I think from the project, the loan funding, you say it's 60% from South Africa, 40% from our neighbor, is a poor country. I don't know this 40% how they can pay for this loan. Even your JWC, you have the boat. And the department is no concern for the 40%. I think it's 640 million rand. How is this our neighbor country can pay? Because it is a very poor country. And also your challenge from the last point that you said, Mozambique involved and beneficiation. I want to know how is this beneficiation with this project from the Mozambique. Then the involved, you ought to take all the risk or all the beneficiary only. So I would like to get to this point. Thank you.
Got it? Okay. How about you?
Yes, sir. Question on the apportionment of Swaziland, displaying the kingdom of Swaziland. In the one slide it was presented there, that South Africa is paying 60% of Maguga Dam and Swaziland 40% of Maguga Dam. Then three copies, which is Lake Masango, South Africa pays 100% and Swaziland pays no percentage. Nothing on that.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue of consent in terms of the number of mining licenses. Yes, that's a serious concern. I think we just calculated yesterday, looking at current application for 2010. In total, we've got 75 applications that came in for 2010, but about 50 of those licenses are mining licenses. And hence, yes, it might not affect this particular project, because this project is on the other side where the mining activities, but it can affect the crocodile. But you also remember that the department has also resuscitated the operation of Bird Strait, which was now to deal with all those mine effluent systems before throwing them back to the resource, which eliminates the metals, eliminates the acid and everything through lime, you know, application and etc. And also, we are wary of the situation, but we also, on a positive note, in terms of optimum, you know, reclamation plant and also Anglo reclamation plant in the Malahleni, whereby they've already taken up, and Malahleni is demanding more water. That is why now the department is looking at changing Brakspruit in terms of throwing the water straight to the river to also make it a reclamation plant to supply the Malahleni with potable water. So yes, there is a concern, but there are also mitigating factors linked to that. In terms of Mozambique beneficiation, out of this, there's another structure which now hosts all the three countries, which is called the Tripartite Permanent Technical Committee, TPTC. that tripartite permanent technical committee, which I'm also the acting leader of delegation from South Africa, is now dealing not only with these water courses, but is dealing with Pongola Port Dam, is dealing with rivers in Swaziland going to Mozambique, is dealing with rivers in South Africa going into Mozambique. Hence, we were able, one of the good examples, we were in a TPTC last week, Republic of Mozambique was able to hail South Africa to say, job well done during the floods now in December. Because we received the operation levels and messages were sent to Mozambique, Swaziland, within a few minutes' time before the flood levels reached Mozambique. Hence, they were able to evacuate some of the low-lying areas people. They were able to send messages. So far, the area of concern was that the supply to Mozambique, we had to maintain a minimum of 2 megs a day. That was the supply. To say during the cloudy season, we sometimes struggle because when the abstraction is too much, even if the dam levels are there, we can release water, putting Mozambique in between. But in between the border from the dam in between, then there is that abstraction that is illegal that is happening. Hence, we are saying we have to make sure that metering happens. We have to make sure that the reallocation program happens as soon as possible. Thank you.
Something to add, Dr. Rich?
Yeah, I just wanted to add what colleague was saying. That the aspect of mining the mostly coal in the upper reaches of the Kumasi, in terms of that is where there are the power stations. But we don't, at the moment, there's no water quality problem in terms of mining. We're only starting with the woolly funds. So the woolly funds is the major one. The aspect, Jefferson, that I want to conclude from our side, from your department side, is that if I may say that all of these entities, in terms of their responsibilities, is that they do have their business contacts with the department and the minister, the executive authority, in terms of their oversight. Organization, and therefore they do have also their reporting on a quarterly.
What you
basis.
Must do for me is you must put a package together for us to distribute. Notice of establishment.
Yes. Okay.
Now, where will I find something?
Okay, we will see.
And this compact,
yeah.
Will you put a package together so that we can just understand what this relationship is, if you can do that for us, okay? And then, Dr. Raiders, I think also, you know, when you were here, there was a lot of tasks we gave you. Looking at these projects, I think we need, one of the issues we ask you to do is to put together for us all the projects that you're busy with in the department.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to put these projects because we've got
yeah,
them. So what we need now is all the others so that we can have a whole picture of the project. And remember, I've asked you for future,
yeah,
for criteria, all that
right.
Stuff, and you can start working on that. I think on the projects that exist, that shouldn't be too difficult to give that report.
Yeah.
Because that'll be, then we'll have a whole picture at least as a committee, okay? Anything else from your side?
Yeah, Chipperton, I just wanted to then conclude in terms of the reporting. They do report, and obviously in terms of you see the annual reports, and also the quarterly reporting to do have. And for us, in terms of the person that looking after these entities that's sitting to my right, Topic Segwaza, it's multifaceted entities that we do have in the department doing important work and making sure that South Africa is ticking. Although the problems that we do have within the department, but at least South Africa is not running out of water, our electricity is there, so we have important projects that what the entities are here tested. And obviously, we as a collective family, in terms of the water business, must make sure that South Africa gets its, the citizens of this country and looking after a strategic resource. Thank you, Stephen.
And then we'll do that. You know, I think the issue still for me is what is the institutional arrangement, the optimal institutional arrangement in government to deal with infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I've asked these two inputs, because you know, we've got the department, and we've got them doing something, we've got them doing something. And it's a fragmented model, and it may work well, I don't know, but, you know, maybe there's a more optimal model. I mean, I don't know how well this compact thing works and so on, because, you know, in the end of the day, for me, government ultimately has to
be able to account to the people of South Africa about water. Now, you know, when you're doing it through fragmented institutions and so on, and there may be actually good reason, maybe the salary structure you can give to those two institutions are better than you can give for officials in the department because you're stuck. Maybe these guys are big earners, I don't know. Maybe that's why they've got the model. So sometimes, you know, there's a reason why maybe one will keep a fragmented model, because if you were to do it with the inside government, there's limitations in terms of, you know, the kind of people you can, the categories of staff, and then what I'm just saying is, I don't want to discuss it. What I'm just saying now is, I think that discussion we still have to have. And I know that Minister is one of the things she's busy looking at, in any case. But it's something we have to engage on, because even if we keep the models as they are now, I mean, how do we optimize the use of them? You know, how we build extra capacity there that may be able to be doing from the department, or do we get more of this capacity within the department to make sure, you know, whatever the discussions. But I thank all of you. It's given me, in any case, a much clearer picture of where things are, and you will hear from us during the course of the year. And I just say, keep building. But build it strong. Don't let those things wash away at some stage. And stay away from too much procurement, okay? All right. Members, we have tomorrow an interesting meeting. Tomorrow we have the Deputy Minister of Economic Development coming to talk to us about the new economic growth plan. And I've asked him with specific emphasis on what would you be looking at in these two departments of ours for job creation and so on. So it's in general what the plan is, but also more specifically, and obviously infrastructure is going to be the main job creator, there can be no doubt about it. So that's going to be quite interesting tomorrow, 9:30 in M46, okay, downstairs, you know, that fun in the club. Okay, thank you very much, thanks to everyone.
I'll give you